is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White! He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon, all you Napa Auto Parts fans. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones. Are you drinking coffee, Mr. Jones?
I've been drinking it every day.
I thought you didn't do coffee.
You know, I started last week. Was that last week or 2 weeks ago? Something like that. And I was informed, don't start it. It's not a good habit to start. And I've started it. Now it's full-fledged, but I'm only one cup a day. There are people in this building that are doing, like, 4 cups by 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, not me. I'm like, a one-cup guy.
You're a one-cup guy?
Yep, I already had it. Actually,
when you wake up in the morning?
Not necessarily. Sometimes on my way into work today, I got up around 6:30 or 7 and had a cup. You know, home brew. It was good. Making good coffee at home these days. You know, new coffee maker for Christmas.
Oh, you got a new coffee maker.
It
okay.
Works. Yeah, we'll see how long it works. But I'm surprised. I thought you were not a coffee guy. What happened? Is it...
One day, I had a rough night. I didn't sleep.
Okay.
And I woke up, and I said, I need something to help me to get through this day because I didn't want to be yawning on air.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Let me go and get some coffee and see how this works out.
It works, doesn't it?
It actually does. Yeah. It does. You know, it kicks in, and I start to feel like when yours kicks in, which is hilarious. But then I just don't like the crash part of it.
Yeah, that's the downside.
It's like, man, I think it's wearing off now. Yeah. That's how I feel.
Then what do you do?
Right.
All right, well,
drink
enough coffee
cup.
Talk.
You drink another cup. See, that's
no,
the issue.
Then you've gone down that road and you can't come back. Welcome to Coffee Talk. John Murphy, Donald Jones here until 3. We got a Friday show for you. Friday before the championship games. Some people think championship weekend is the best weekend in sports. Some people think last weekend, the divisional round, is the best weekend. I don't know. I mean, I like them all, but certainly this is appointment television, right? You're going to make a point to watch these games this Sunday, I would think.
You know, the reason I make an appointment to watch these games or a point to watch these games is because football season is coming to an end.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we have this week, and then you have the Senior Bowl and Pro Bowl and stuff like that, and then you got the Super Bowl, and it's done until we get back to August.
Right.
So that's why once we get to this point, I'm sitting down. And we talked about last week, it was like, I probably won't watch all these games. This week, I'm watching both games.
Me too.
I will sit down and watch
And they're back-to-back.
Back,
you know, what is it, 3 o'clock on Sunday, followed by the
like
second game? 6:30 or so.
Yeah.
Back-to-back, you know, it's going to be a nice way to watch. Jaguars and Patriots, 3:05 on CBS. Vikings and Eagles, 6:40 on Fox. You know, you know the announcers. They're like, you know, Jim Nance Tony Romo. They're like family now.
I saw your boy Gene Steratore is doing the Super Bowl.
Yeah. He's not my boy anymore.
Oh, all right.
Well, yeah, he made a call in Purdue, Michigan a week or two ago, and he is officially off my boy list.
Those of you who don't know, Murph is a big-time Michigan basketball fan.
And in fact, you're only about the third person this week that said, hey, your boy Steratore, he's not my boy.
You got to clear that.
Yeah.
Let's clear the air. He is not my boy.
That's what the Michigan coach said to me Monday night. You know, he said, hey, your boy's territory. And I said, whoa, he's not my boy. He's not my boy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, you know, this is not a vendetta or anything, but he is off my list. He's off my Christmas card list. He never was on it.
Well, I feel like we've become so accustomed to seeing the Patriots play this Sunday. It's like every year they're playing this Sunday. Now, they might lose and not get to the Super Bowl some years, but for like the last 10 years, every year, it's like they're playing on this Sunday. You get tired of seeing them, and they're at home. That's what's even crazier about the situation. They're always playing in New England on this week.
I got some numbers for you here, Donald. Actually, while I was brewing and sipping my coffee this morning, I was actually this is Tom Brady's unprecedented 12th starting quarterback in a championship game. 7-4 in his previous AFC championship game appearances. And there was something else that got my attention about this. A win on Sunday would earn the Patriots an unprecedented 10th trip to the Super Bowl, where they would try to match Pittsburgh's all-time record of 6 Super Bowl victories. Gillette Stadium, this is going to be the 7th time they've hosted a conference championship game. Only Candlestick Park in San Francisco has hosted more. That goes to your point. Most appearances in a conference championship game. This will be the 14th appearance for the New England Patriots. Puts them 4th on the list between the Cowboys, Steelers, and 49ers.
Ridiculous.
You are right. The Patriots always play this Sunday.
Always.
The numbers bear it out.
That's crazy. It's I get tired of seeing it. And
so
then
I
get tired of seeing them celebrate and go to the Super Bowl, and then we got to go through the 2 weeks of NBC talking about the Patriots and the Super Bowl, and then you got the – I just get tired of seeing them.
I mean, anticipate what's going to happen here. If the Patriots win on Sunday, which I think they probably will, mm-hmm. we're going to have to listen for a couple of weeks to now, the Patriots, if they win their seventh Super Bowl, are they the greatest team of all time? It's
yes.
a legitimate argument, right? If
yeah.
they're going to win their seventh Super Bowl, if they're going to play for the Super Bowl again, tying that, the,
yeah.
the Steelers, right? It's How could
legit,
you not ask
it's,
that?
It's definitely a legit argument. And it's not even – you have so many other teams like the Cowboys and the Steelers, and they had their runs. I feel like the Patriots, they've had a long run here of a decade and a half or more, 17 years of just dominance. And so they probably will go down. If they win this one, they will go down as the best team ever.
That could happen. So we want to talk about these games. We've got a good guest lineup today coming up at 1 o'clock. Greg Cosell, our buddy from ESPN's NFL matchup. He'll give us the matchups for these two games. We'll recap a little bit about last week's games. We could probably ask Greg about his thoughts on Brian Daboll, right? His offense,
yeah.
what it might look
mm-hmm.
like. Greg's pretty astute on that stuff. Greg Cosell from ESPN NFL matchup joining us at 1 o'clock today.
We got this tweet in. Greg Torlone says, "This is the best weekend of the year for football, but the best weekend of the year for sports is the first Thursday to Sunday of the NCAA tournament."
Wouldn't disagree with that.
That is a great weekend.
That's a great weekend.
I mean, it's so much fun that happens that weekend.
Yeah, watching all those games. It's great when you got a tournament venue in town in Buffalo, and then you got all these other games you can watch on the off days.
Yeah,
I love those days.
Great.
Good point, Greg. Greg Cosell at 1, 2 o'clock, Albert Breer, who's written a couple of interesting things. He is formerly of NFL Network and NFL.com. Albert has done an exhaustive survey on how conference championship teams were built. He went through all of them, the Jaguars, the Patriots, the Vikings, the Eagles, how they were built, how they were put together, who were the architects of these teams. We will talk with Albert Breer about that coming up at 2 o'clock today. Going to be pretty interesting stuff. We've got NFL True and False. We've got our predictions on the championship game. And we want to engage you, too, on this weekend's games. By the way, it's quiet here at One Bills Drive. Everybody's headed out to the Senior Bowl next week.
Right.
And by the way, our man Chris Brown is going to be one of them. Chris Brown will be reporting live for us from Mobile, Alabama, the site of the Reese's Senior Bowl next week. Chris will be on the air with us Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday next week, talking to some of the prospects, talking to the Bills decision makers. Brandon Bean will be there, the general manager. We'll have Sean McDermott, the head coach, and the new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, all of them at the Senior Bowl. Chris will talk with all of them and many more next week right here on our show. I'm jealous. I love the Senior Bowl.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to be down there. I haven't been down there on this side as a member of the media, but that is a fun week to get down there. You see, and this week I think it's going to be a little more fun because you have so many big names, especially at the quarterback position.
Yep.
You have a couple of big names that people are really going to pay attention to, especially with Mel Kiper putting out that the kid from Wyoming is going to be the number one pick. Now, everybody wants to see him. What can he do? Is he going to be the number one pick, or is he going to just go in this game and not have a good game? Will he drop down the draft board, all of that stuff, because of this week? And we all know, or those of you who don't know, I mean, we watched the game on Sunday, but the week leading up to the game, especially Tuesday, Wednesday, are the big days that everybody should pay attention to. That's when the scouts are there, and it's nerve-wracking as a player because you're out there on the field. And when you look up in the stands, all you see is every different team and all of the scouts, coaches, some owners might even come, GMs might be there depending on what the case may be. I would think this year you might see even more because you have these big-name quarterbacks playing in the game.
Chris Brown will be there too. If you look up in the stands, you'll see Chris Brown, our own Bills insider.
Yeah.
He'll be joining us live next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. Hey, we want to talk with you about this weekend's championship games, and the phone lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. On the championship games, you know, there's a lot of different ways around it. Who's going to win? Yeah, okay, obviously. How do you think these games might play out? We thought we might have a little fun with it, and from a fan perspective, this is where we need your input. Which team are you rooting the most for this weekend? Who are you rooting hardest for of these four teams? You know the matchups, the Jaguars, the Patriots, the Vikings, the Eagles. I don't know that there's too many Buffalo Bills fans or Western New Yorkers that have a dog in this fight, right? I mean, I don't know of any Vikings, Eagles. I guess I could pick out a few. Jaguars, I don't know any Jaguar fans. And I sure as heck don't know any Patriots fans around here. But who are you rooting the hardest for this weekend?
Man. I saw a Patriots fan the other day.
Locally?
I'm like, what are you doing?
What are you doing here? Did you get lost?
What is going on with you? I mean, I'm surprised you're able to even walk around with that thing on.
Yeah. Who are you rooting for? Who are you pulling for this Sunday in the championship games? That is our Twitter poll, and that's been up for about 30 minutes. Got about 1,000 votes in so far. Which team are you rooting the hardest for this weekend? 55% of you say you're a Minnesota Viking fan this Sunday. All right, 30% of you say you're a Jacksonville Jaguars fan this week. 9% say you're rooting the hardest for the Eagles. 6%, I'd like to meet these people, 6% right. Say you're rooting for the Patriots the hardest this weekend. Give us a call. Lines are open, too. Which team are you rooting for the hardest this weekend? 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter, at John Murphy Show, and vote in our Twitter poll. Which team are you rooting the hardest for this weekend? I guess I'm going to have to go with the 9%ers, Donald. I'll be honest with you. I'm rooting the hardest. I mean, I don't really have an emotional attachment to any of these teams, but I'm rooting for the Philadelphia Eagles. I really am. They're home. Okay. They've got the fans who are troubling at times with some of their behavior, and their reputation certainly is troubling. But I like the story of the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, I like the fact that they just lost their quarterback back in week 14, and yet they keep plugging away. I like their defense, the Philadelphia Eagles. I like Frank Reich on the coaching staff. I root hard for Frank to have success as the offensive coordinator and look forward to seeing him succeed and maybe getting to the Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles. I like Nigel Branham, who played here. I thought he was a heck of a player here, and sorry that he left, and he has nothing but success since he's been in Philadelphia. There's a lot to like on the Philadelphia Eagles team. Like the fact that they're home. I think they're going to win, and that's the team I'm pulling for the hardest this weekend, the Eagles. By the way, I like Merrill Reese, who we had on the show with the chef today. I'm rooting for him to get back to his Super Bowl.
I look at it, and I was always taught, if you don't have haters, you're doing something wrong.
That explains a lot.
That's how my father taught. If you don't have haters, you're doing something wrong. So just keep doing the right things. People are going to hate. You just got to be able to deal with that stuff and just go ahead and brush it off your shoulders. So this week I'm going to be a hater. And I'm going to be a hater on the New England Patriots. So I'm going to root for the Jacksonville Jaguars just because of what we were just talking about. I'm tired of seeing them dominate so much. I'm tired of seeing them play. They're already playing in this game, but I'm tired of seeing them celebrate and have to go through 2 weeks of everything about the Patriots when it comes to the Super Bowl. I'm just tired of seeing it. I want to see them lose. I made the bold prediction yesterday that they were going to win the game because of that strong defense, and I don't know how it's going to play out, but I'm going to stick to that and say they're going to win that game. I think I'm just a hater this week, so I'm going to go with Jacksonville.
You got Jacksonville. I got the Eagles.
They're hating my blood.
Who do you have? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Who are you rooting for the hardest this weekend? Lines are open. We've got a couple of tweets in on this. Brian Dabgoat tweets in, Jags and Vikings. That, you know, must happen.
Jags and Vikings. Just imagine. All right. Blake Bortles versus Case Keenum. Ugh.
Right.
I mean, people will watch the Super Bowl, but that might be the lowest rated Super Bowl. And every year, the Super Bowl ratings go up.
Yeah.
That one would that would drop.
Yeah, you're right. Here's a tweet that says, I will never pull for a dome team. Play real football. Wow. Okay.
That's crazy.
That is a little nutty. So that eliminates the Minnesota Vikings, I guess. Yeah. So you're not pulling for Minnesota. Trevor, cleverly, no option for anyone but the Patriots? Yeah. Jeff tweets in, Murph, why did you put the Patriots? I know they play Maroon, but still. Why? Because there's four slots open in our Twitter poll, and there's four teams playing.
Right.
What am I going to do?
You want other? To put other.
You know, that's why. Jim Kendall tweets in, can't stand either AFC team. I'm kind of in that camp. I guess I'm a hater, too. I don't like the Patriots. I do not look forward to them being in the Super Bowl again. And I really have, and this is not sour grapes, but I have very little respect for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't think they're that good a team. They put up 10 points and beat the Bills just 2 weeks ago. I don't know what went on in Pittsburgh last week. They, you know, I think Bortles is not a good player. I think they've got some talent on offense. They've got a lot of talent on defense. They've got a lot of yappers on defense, the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I can't get around, and I'm not a hater, But I can't root for Doug Marrone. And I'm at a loss here, Donald, and this happens all the time in the media, in the world of perception. When a team has success, all of a sudden there's this revisionist history that surrounds players and coaches and, oh, he was a good guy after all. This is happening right now with Doug Marrone. It'll happen in the next 2 days. Robert Klemko, pretty good writer for MMQB, wrote a piece that went up on MMQB this week, yesterday. From Buffalo to Jacksonville, how Doug Marrone changed his style. Has he changed? I don't know. Klemko writes, there was no love lost between Marrone and many in the Bills organization. Numerous Buffalo staffers and players going on and off the record to trash Marrone's organizational chops on his way out the door, including Marcel Darius, who's had a bit of an about face. You know, Marcel Darius now says he claims Doug Marrone has changed. Hmm. And he likes working with Doug Marrone. After Marrone left a couple of years ago, Marcel Darius was quoted as blasting Doug Marrone, saying he walks around on eggshells. He said, this is 2 years ago, Marcel Darius. He said he was glad Marrone is gone. His ex-coach is anal retentive and treats his players like children. Now you've got...
anal retentive.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like Marcel. Now you got Marcel Darius talking about how Doug Marrone has changed. Has he? Has he changed that much? Or have they just had a little luck and won some games and... Look, I'll go right back to where we were 2 weeks ago. Took advantage of a weak schedule and won the AFC South and then beat the Bills as the Bills were inept offensively and then put up all those points last Sunday somehow. Has Doug Marrone really changed? Are we really ready to rewrite the book on Doug Marrone? I'm not. Some people are. You'll hear it. You know, the networks will fawn all over him. There was this report, too.
Don't let him win this week.
It's happening right now. How about this? How about Albert Breer? And we got to ask him about this because I came across this when he talked about the championship teams, about how no less than Bill Belichick, right, the coach who everybody thinks is the man, Bill Belichick recommended Marrone to the Jacksonville Jaguars to be their head coach. Belichick, according to Albert Breer, put in a glowing recommendation for Jacksonville's own offensive line coach. When Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, was looking for a head coach a year ago, he called Belichick, who said to him, hey, you've already got your guy, Doug Marrone. Is this the same Doug Marrone who worked here? What does this say more about Marrone? Has he changed? Does it say something about Belichick? Does it say something about us? I got to ask Albert Breer this. Is there something different here that folks here had a heck of a time getting on board with Doug Marrone and a heck of a time following him? And really, I mean, he left enemies here, both in and out of the organization, on the roster and off the roster. And now, you know, he has changed man, and Bill Belichick says he's your guy. He's the kind of guy you want. What am I missing, Doug?
I wasn't here with Doug Marrone. I've heard a lot of different stories about the type of person he was here. And I'm not even talking about the type of coach. The type of person that he was around the building. I've heard a lot of bad things. The fact of the matter is, I think Doug Marrone and Bill Belichick are like the same person in a different body. They have the same personality. And Bill Belichick, because he's won so much, everybody in that organization is just like, okay, this is how it is. But if Bill Belichick didn't win games, they'd be like, man, this dude is terrible. Somebody get rid of this guy, you know, especially people in the media, like, please get rid of this guy. So the fact that he's won games now, all right, Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time, so you got to just deal with it. Doug Marrone now, he's had some wins, and so people are like, this dude is a pretty good dude. But if he wasn't winning games, people would be like, man, this dude is horrible. Mm-hmm. Marcel Darius, it's interesting because I've had a chance to talk to Marcel Darius about different coaches that have come and gone here. I had a chance to speak to him about Sean McDermott as well. And he was like, look, he talked about Sean McDermott. And he said, you know, this is what I'm used to. I come from Alabama where Nick Saban, I played under Nick Saban. This is the type of stuff that I'm used to. So when he talked about Doug Marrone before, it's interesting to hear him say that type of stuff because he actually told me this is the type of stuff that I'm used to. Mm-hmm. Now to hear him actually politically correct because he got a second chance down in Jacksonville, it's a little bit different, you know. So we heard Marcel, I read an article on Marcel a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how he feels like Jacksonville has given him a second chance. He feels like he's learned a lot down there. He feels like he's changing and evolving as a person. So it's just, that's what happened when you win.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what happens when you win.
Not only, it changes everybody's perception. It changes the narrative, the stories that are written about you and your team. Darius said he's observed, he told Robert Klemko this, he observed a changed man this year in Marrone. He has the confidence of the locker room in ways that would have been unimaginable to Marcel Darius just 3 years ago here in Buffalo. And this is the quote from Marcel Darius about Doug Marrone. He listens. There comes a point when you have to understand people's needs and learning patterns, and now he has a good way of feeling out learning patterns and understanding who he's dealing with. He always told it how it was, but it rubbed certain guys the wrong way. Yeah. There were a lot of people who didn't like Marrone's style. I used to think he was really not temperamentally fit to be an NFL head coach, just in terms of his mood and his attitude and the attitude he conveyed to his players. I thought that several times when he was here. I'm not going to rewrite history for Doug. If they beat the Patriots Sunday, I'm going to stick by my conviction of what I saw, what I observed, and what I learned about Doug Marrone from being around him for a couple of years.
It's all about winning, because if he wasn't winning, you'd have those players coming out saying totally different things about Doug Marrone. And we're going to talk about having fun in the NFL. Is it too much fun in the NFL? And he's actually in that article that I was reading earlier.
Yeah.
As they talk about him when he got there, or last year when he wasn't the head coach, he hated the fact that they had Nintendo 64 in the locker room and ping pong tables and all of that stuff. When he became the head coach, he took it all out. So now, because he took all that stuff out, now you're winning games. I mean, we're going to talk about this here soon, but he's not a different person. He's the same person. He still is bringing that, you know, I'm the coach, I run this thing mentality, that military. He probably still says crazy things to the players. The fact of the matter is, they've been winning games this year, and they find themselves right here. So you have the players now falling in line saying, all right, maybe this is – I can deal with it. If we're going to win games, I can deal with it. And that's what it is up in New England. Those players can deal with it because they win. And you know that. And that's why you hear so many veterans, when they leave somewhere else and go to New England, say, man, I don't like it here. I got to get out of here. And they might stay for a year. Then when they leave and go somewhere else, they come out and say, man, I could finally be myself. But you were okay with dealing with that because you knew you were going to win some games there.
I hear it, and I know it's about winning, and I appreciate that. But this is a roundabout way of saying I cannot root for the Jaguars. I will not root for the Patriots. I will watch that game, the AFC Championship game, and I don't know what I'll root for. Which team would you root for the most this weekend?
Just be upset at everything that happens.
Yeah. I'll have no fun watching that game. Somebody's going to win that game. I will not enjoy it, no matter who it is. Who are you rooting for the hardest this weekend? Give us a call, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Pat in North Tonawanda, get us kicked off here, Pat. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, John.
Sure.
I just don't know how anybody could want New England to win. I mean, it's incontrovertible. I just can't think of any other team I would want to see out of the playoffs. And, you know, with Doug Marrone, how about thinking about this for a second? I mean, I was really mad at him when he left, and, you know, the circumstances that he left, I felt like he ratted out on us and stuff like that. But looking back at it, you know, I could almost understand why he left. You know, looking at the GM that we had at that time, and we were a dysfunctional franchise. You know, 1 week before the start of the season, he told him, I can't win with this quarterback. He went out and got a free agent quarterback. The quarterback left. New owners came in. You know, he probably overplayed his hand. He thought he could be a head coach with the Jets or something like that. And I was happy to see him get knocked down a peg. But I really don't have much animosity toward the guy. Now, that being said, you know, I wasn't around him as much as you guys. And, you know, he did seem, what did he call himself? He didn't call himself the Emperor.
St. Doug.
St. Doug, yeah. You know, he probably is a little bit of an egomaniac. But like you guys said, you know, like Al David said, just win, baby. If you win, we're going to love you. I mean, we'll love you in Buffalo.
You got a little bit, Pat, thanks for your call, a little bit of the chronology wrong. The owners were in place by the time St. Doug decided to depart. And for me, I thought the way he left was awful, you know, to bail on a team. And it looked like a cash grab at the time. I'm sure he probably would have wished circumstances surrounding his job would have been a little bit better. Who wouldn't? But to walk out the way he did, I have a problem with it. But that's not the biggest problem. My biggest problem with Doug Marrone is the way he ran this franchise when he was here, the way he treated players, the way he treated staffers, his general approach. It was sort of a persecution complex. Like, woe is me. Oh, look what I got to put up with. I'm St. Doug. I turned around Syracuse. Now I got to try to do the same thing in poor little Buffalo. And, I've got a tough...
You took the job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what you came here to
do. That's what he did. I know. I just – that is the problem I have with Doug Marrone, that whole persecution complex that he – there's baggage almost, you know, and I just don't think he was temperamentally the right person to be a head coach anywhere. Is he different in Jacksonville? Maybe. I mean, I've talked to him three times since he took the job down there, since he's been down there. You can't tell in a 15, 20-second, two-minute, exchange of pleasantries, but I can't root for him. I cannot root for him, and I will not root for him.
From what I understand about Doug Marrone, he was the type of coach where he really just didn't care about the players. I mean, that's what, when you talk to different people, he didn't care about the players. He didn't care about the staff. None of that stuff. He wanted to win games, but even if he had a player who was playing bad, he might even say something horrible about that player to somebody else, and you're like, wow, you just say that about your player? You know, like that, he's actually, and especially a coach, when you're a guy who's in the locker room with these players, or not in the locker room, but you're in the meeting rooms, you're on the field with these players. I mean, you see them every single day, and you just dog them like that when you're not around them. Is that how you really feel about the situation? Is that how you really treat people in the building? I think Coach McDermott here now has a very good balance of understanding family values, understanding people around the organization and how you treat people in this building, understanding that you guys are on the field, you guys are coaches, the players are on the field getting it done, but there are a lot of people in this organization that help to make this thing go. There are a lot of people in this organization that help your players. And that's all week and then on game day as well, you know, and you treat them the same way as you treat your players. You treat them the same way that you want to be treated. And I don't, from what I understand, Doug Marrone didn't understand that part of it.
What do you think? Who are you rooting for? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Jake calling from Lockport. Go ahead, Jake. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure.
One of the few Vikings fans here in Buffalo. I do root for the Bills, but I've always been a Vikings fan. And just want to get your guys' thoughts on their chances this weekend. You know, the story of Dalvin Cook and all the guys getting hurt early and still making the punch this far. And what you guys think as far as playing outdoors in Philly and what the chances are of us getting to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they got a chance. I think they got a good chance, actually, given the injuries that Philadelphia has suffered. Now, the Eagles are going to be home, and the Eagles are playing well. But sure, they got a chance. I think the Vikings, I think that's going to be, could be a compelling game.
The biggest thing that you have to worry about, and the Bills went through the same thing after getting into the playoffs and the way they got in with the emotions of the game, how they actually beat the Saints. I mean, emotionally, you went on the highest of highs. You a walk-off touchdown to get yourself to this point. So when you come out in this game, are you ready? Are you still having the effects of that game? Have you now truly prepared for this game? Because that's crazy. Now, Stephon Diggs, you just had a crazy play, one of the best plays in NFL history. That play, 20 years from now, people are going to be talking about that play. So in this game, do you come out and have a bad game, five drops or something, you know, something like that? Right. Is there a letdown in this game? That's the one thing I worry about with the Vikings in this game coming off of last week. But ultimately, I think the Vikings has a very good defense. I think they have a quarterback who is playing well right now. I think they have good receivers. They have a running game. I think they are a more complete team right now. But I think because they have their quarterback who's been there all year playing hot, I think they are a more complete team. And I think they also have, if they can keep their emotions in check, they're one game away from being the first team to ever play in a Super Bowl at home. And I think that's something that they might even be talking about. And you don't want to talk about that. You got a game that we got to play. But deep down in your mind, you're like, man, we could actually play a Super Bowl here, home crowd in the Super Bowl. That could be amazing, you know. And so I think they might use that to catapult them to a victory.
It's going to be a fun game to watch for sure. Which team are you rooting for the hardest this Sunday in the championship games? We're going to talk more about that when we come back, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Before we go, though, we had Lorenzo Alexander on the show here yesterday, Donald, and he's always a lot of fun. And he told us he is celebrating, what do you say, his 10th wedding anniversary?
Yeah.
This week, and he's off to Jamaica for the weekend. Lorenzo tweeted out a picture of him on his flight this morning with the comment. And it says, when flying, the best seating arrangement, if applicable, is put the smallest person in the middle, not sit the two biggest people on the plane together. I'm just saying, Can we be as comfortable as possible, especially on a long flight? He tweeted that out about an hour ago.
Right, right.
You've had a little fun with that.
I've had some fun with that. I've had some more fun with another thing that he tweeted out after that. He tweeted out a picture of the guy.
Yeah, their legs touching.
Their legs touching. Yeah.
He goes, enough is enough. At least lean towards your significant other and not me. Don't judge me if something happens.
So I had fun with that. And I'm like, well, you know, just make sure you don't end up leaning on his shoulder, falling asleep. So then somebody tweets me, Nick Sally says, or hear me out. Do fall asleep on his shoulder to make it a little awkward. So then I responded, well, you might as well drool on his shoulder.
A couple of things. Lorenzo, we love Lorenzo, and we're happy he's going to Jamaica to celebrate his anniversary. Mm-hmm. Lorenzo got a pretty big, sizable contract a year ago. He seems to me he might be a guy who would apply for first class. Why is he back there and coach, rubbing knees, shoulders with the next biggest guy on the flight? You know what I mean?
You know, Lorenzo is one of the...
We're learning about Lorenzo.
We are. He's one of the most most humble people that you would meet, I could say. Even though we go back and forth, I think when I talk to him, he is one of the most humble people because he comes from humble beginnings. But, you know, you're going to celebrate your anniversary. I mean, your anniversary.
Yeah.
You need to go ahead and upgrade the first
Don't
class.
You think? Business class? Try something instead. And white, where's his wife?
I was about to say that, too. Like, the crazy thing is he's not sitting next to his wife. He's sitting next to another couple.
Is she driving in Jamaica or what? Lorenzo, pull yourself together, man. Pretty funny stuff. We hope he has a great trip. Sounds like it's off to a bad start, doesn't it?
It is. Hopefully it goes well throughout the rest of the week or weekend. And then I forgot when he said he was coming back, but... And maybe on the flight back, he's like, I can't do it. I got to upgrade to first class.
First class shaming. Hey, when we come back, we talked a lot about Doug Marrone. We talked about Belichick. We talked about coaches, their style, and how much fun is too much fun in an NFL locker room. We're going to get into that discussion. Plus, more from you. Who are you rooting for the hardest this weekend in the championship games? Phone lines wide open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back, John Murphy, Donald Jones here until 3. We've got Greg Cosell here to break down the matchups with us at 1 o'clock for the championship games. Got Albert Breer going to join us at 2 o'clock from mmqb.si.com to talk about how these four championship game contenders, how their rosters were built. Let's hear from you. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. On our topic of the day, our Twitter poll deals with the who you rooting for, basically, this Sunday. Which team do you want to see win the most? Which team you rooting for the hardest this weekend on Twitter? More than half of you, 56% of you, say you are Vikings fans this Sunday. 30% of you say you're Jacksonville Jaguars fans. What a turnaround from 2 weeks ago. 9% say you're Eagles fans. 5% of you say you root for the Patriots this week. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Perry calling from Jamestown. Perry, who you got?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'd like to see Minnesota beat Philly. I mean, I'd love to see New England lose to Jacksonville, but I'd like to see Minnesota beat Philly just in case they do play the Patriots in Minnesota. At least they'd be at home, and I think they'd have a good shot at beating them.
That's a good point. I never thought of that, Perry. You're right. They would get home field against the Patriots, and whoever plays the Patriots in the Super Bowl is going to need everything they can get for an edge.
Everything really you point. Can get. For an edge.
Later, Brady and Belichick, their doors got to close. It happened to Peyton. It happens to all of them.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's this year. Even though they haven't, they it's crazy because they won so many games. They found ways to win games this year, but it hasn't been the dominance that we've seen out of the Patriots, where they win 13, 14 games and they just dominate every game. They might have one game where they don't dominate, but. You look back at – and here's the – for me, the most interesting thing is I know that Gronk didn't play in that Miami game, but I think Miami truly showed
– That Monday night game?
That Monday night game that they were a more physical team than the Patriots. They had DBs that could match up with those wide receivers. Without Gronk, I get that. They showed that they could beat up on the Patriots. And I think you have – the rest of the teams are three defenses that I think can truly match up with the Patriots. They have very good corners on all of these teams, good corners that can match up with those receivers. They are good against the run. They have linebackers who are fast. So I feel like they have people that can cover Gronk. So I feel like these teams defensively can match up with the Patriots, all of the teams that are still in it. You know, it's just – it always comes down to when you're playing the Patriots, do you make the mistake? Do you make the mistake that loses you the game? And that's the one thing that we're talking about, because you have Blake Bortles, Case Keenum, and who else is in this thing? Nick Foles.
Yeah.
And those are quarterbacks that can make a mistake.
Yeah.
Because this moment might be too big, where the Patriots, they're here every year, so they're used to this moment.
Good points. John calling from wherever. John, welcome. You're on the air with us. Who are you rooting for in Sunday's games, John?
I think just, you know, being a Bills fan and everything, you look at the Vikings, their history, they've lost 4 Super Bowls. They've had a lot of heartbreak in the big games. So you got to kind of pull for them. Very similar weather to us and who they're playing against. It's really hard to cheer for a fan base that threw D batteries at Santa Claus.
That's the myth, I guess. I don't know if they did or not. The thing, John, about the Super Bowl losses, that the record in the Super Bowl they share with the Bills, Thurman here yesterday, Thurman Thomas pointed out, if they go to the Super Bowl, the Vikings, and if they win a Super Bowl, Minnesota, then the Bills are all alone in that category. Thurman didn't want that, which I thought was interesting. I hadn't thought it that through. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe it means that we're next.
Good point. John, good point. What an optimist you are, John. I like that. Yeah. Here's Jim in Tonawanda. Hello, Jim. Welcome. Who are you rooting for in the hardest on Sunday in the games?
Yeah, I'm on board with the last caller. We're the AFC versions of Minnesota. I understand Thurman's perspective that misery loves company, but I also think the Vikings deserve it. They've had a lot of tough losses. The last play in the last game was phenomenal. Reminded me of the Cincinnati play, actually, which we got in the playoffs. So, listen, if Minnesota can do it, we can do it. And that's why I'm going for the Vikings.
All right. Thanks very much. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Who are you rooting for the hardest this Sunday? A couple of tweets on this issue. Let me get to these. Nathaniel Anderson says, agree with your take on Marone. I'm rooting for New England versus Jacksonville. Then whatever NFC team is in the Super Bowl. Tim Donovan, Marone quit on Buffalo. Never going to root for anywhere he goes. There is some anti-Marone sentiment here. It should not be a surprise to anyone. And Marone's an interesting case because, you know, not – and again, his departure doesn't bother me as much as the way he ran this team when he was here.
Yeah.
And it seems to me – and I see the quotes from Marcel Darius. I plan on asking Albert Breer about this at 2 o'clock. I have a hard time believing that Doug Marone has really changed much in his tenure at Jacksonville. And, Donald, you came across this article in SB Nation.
Mm-hmm.
How much fun is too much fun in an NFL locker room? Part of it deals with the Bills. Part of it deals with Doug Marone. And let me just read you this. Marone, when the Jags were losing 9 straight last season, Marone could not stand it. The head coach was Gus Bradley, but he could not stand it watching players in the locker room playing ping pong, dominoes, blasting music. So when Marone took over, he removed the distractions in the locker room. He took out the ping pong tables, the dominoes. He did something about the music. The Jaguars went from 3-13 a year ago to 10-6 this year. Is that because he took out the ping pong tables? I mean, Sean McDermott did the same thing here. Is there such a thing as a team being distracted by that kind of stuff in the locker room?
I don't really believe that because, I mean, for all of those who listen in to when you hear the locker room interviews, just listen in the background. Dudes are still having fun regardless. I mean, dudes are in there playing music and all types of stuff. So the fact that, I mean, the locker room, to be honest with you, is the one place where you can kind of just chill, let your hair down a little bit, you know, and relax in there. It's just you and your teammates. And so I don't think that because you take the games out of the locker room, now you're going to be a winning team. I don't really believe in that. You know, I don't. It's interesting, though, when I think about – you hear that with Doug Marone. That was one thing that he hated about last year. Just imagine the interview, and they're like, you know, Doug, so if you get the job, what would be some of the first things that you do? Well, first I'm going to take all of the games out of the locker room. And
yeah.
And it's like, really?
Well, I mean, it happened here, though.
It did.
Now, here's the thing. I think those games in the locker room predated Rex Ryan, at least in this new locker room here. I'm pretty sure maybe it was – no, I think it was before Rex Ryan – but the concept back then was, look, We want our players to enjoy being in the locker room with their teammates. We want them to spend time here. We want them to bond with each other here. So that's why you put in a ping pong table, the pool table, a couple of video games. You have them in that room together.
Yeah.
I do. There's an argument to be made that that's a good thing. The other thing is, and people will tell you this, these are competitive individuals. They want to play games against each other.
Yeah.
They want to beat each other in ping pong or pool or some crazy, you know, video game. Why not foster that? That's the argument for it. I don't know. I could care less whether there's games up in that locker room or not. But, there, you know, people make their reputations. You know, the Saints went the other way. The Saints tried to increase focus entering the postseason, so they removed their ping pong table, the basketball hoop, and Nintendo 64. I mean, you don't change it.
Right.
You don't
I don't agree with.
It's
now you want to do
now.
This
Let's,
because it's the postseason. I don't agree with. If it's been like this since the beginning of the season, that's fine. But now you want to switch it up. And I talked about this a couple weeks ago when the Bills were in the playoffs. And I'm like, Coach McDermott is going to do everything the same way. Because when you start to change things up because now you're in a big game or now you're in the postseason, that type of stuff will play in a player's mind. Why are we doing this now? And they should have won that game. I don't think that had anything to do with them actually losing that. Well, we know that didn't have anything to do with them losing that game. But they did come out sleeping in that game. They came out in the first half and were not playing well. They had to come back in that game. So I don't agree with changing things because now you're in the postseason.
This year, the Atlanta Falcons put three ping pong tables in the middle of their locker room, according to this article.
Three.
Dan Quinn said we wanted one more avenue for our team to see how close we could get. Not only do they want to spend time together out of the building, but in the building too. Having that competition is something as small as ping pong. Just go battle for it. We've got 3 minutes to the next meeting. We're going to play a game for 3 minutes. So that's the counter argument. I don't think any of this matters.
I don't think any of it matters. I think it does, though, go a long way to bonding. And it goes a long way to keeping your guys around. We all know coaches and CEOs and everybody, they like for their employees to be around the building.
Yeah.
And if I can keep all of this stuff in the locker room, at least I know you're here. You're not out maybe getting in trouble or at home doing something crazy. Maybe you're here, you're playing, and then you think about, let me go get this extra film work in or something like that. I look at all of the look at the tech companies right now, and it's a huge thing with companies like Facebook, like Google. They have these lavish cafeterias. They have like sleep rooms, all types of stuff on their campuses, so that their employees don't really want for anything. Everything is here for you. Everything is beautiful. We got basketball hoops, all types of stuff here, so you never really have to leave the building. So I would look at it that way. If I can have all of this stuff for these guys, you hear about out in Seattle, they got basketball hoops and everything, so guys are in there playing basketball together. I think it goes a long way to bonding and just wanting to come to work, wanting to come to work every day.
Yeah, I think it doesn't really matter. The Jaguars, probably Doug Marrone will tell you, I got rid of those ping pong tables. That's why we won. Atlanta Falcons might say, we put in ping pong tables. That's why we were able to win. I think you can go either way with that. Who are you rooting for the hardest this Sunday? And what do you think about Doug Marrone? Has he really changed dramatically? Is he a different man? Marcel Darius says he is. Let's talk more about that. You can join us at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. We're coming back for more. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. A couple of tweets that respond to our question, who you're rooting for this weekend, who you're rooting for the most this weekend. Conti tweets in, I can't root for the Patriots regardless of Marrone. Either NFC team will have my full backing in the Super Bowl.
It's crazy how people feel about him out here. And the crazy thing is people are upset at the way he left. They don't even know the things that you know because you're here and you had to work with them every day. People that have worked in this building and were really around him, everybody's just upset because he left and the way he left.
I'll be honest, and I'm thinking I was not that upset
that
he left.
Yeah.
In fact, there part of me was like, okay, let's find a better coach. And I think eventually
maybe
now,
that's because you work with him every day.
Yeah.
You're like, you know what? Somebody get rid of this guy. And then he left, and you're like, yes.
I know they had won 9 games. I was more upset about the circumstances about – you know, taking the money, taking advantage of a contract clause that was intended to protect him in case, you know, the team was going to move. I think that was the original intent, which it clearly was not going to move at that point. And the very next time I saw Doug Marrone at the Combine, a couple of months later, I said to him, Doug, what the heck? Why would you? I mean, I honestly thought this guy, by virtue of the way he left here, is never going to get a chance to be a head coach again. Well, he did. He proved me wrong on that.
Yeah.
But I thought he burned bridges. He kind of indicated that more important to him than what he might have been building here in his mind, more important to him than that was financial security and money. So,
it's the same way, and I don't think Mularkey down in Tennessee, I don't know his whole contract situation, but we were talking about this. This is the second time he's kind of walked away, right?
Mularkey, yeah.
Yeah, and you start to wonder, man, you might not get another job.
Yeah.
Assistant coach, you might have to go down to college or something like that. I mean, how many times can you walk away from an organization and another organization say, yeah, we want to bring him in?
Right. You'd have to ask that question. Here's a call from George in Rochester. Hello, George. Welcome.
How's it going, guys? I listen to your show every day. You guys do a great job.
Thank you, George.
I just want to – yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah, and I like what you're saying. You listen to our show every day, and we do a great job. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I just want to say about when you guys were talking about Doug Marrone removing games and stuff, I used to work at St. John Fisher in the maintenance department, and in the players' dorm hall in, like, the common area, they used to bring in they had a pool table in there. They used to bring in, like, arcade games, like the racing one.
Mm-hmm.
And when he took over as coach, he got rid of all those. And then when Rex came in, Rex brought them back. I don't think that taking those away or bringing or having them there is going to make the team any better. I'm all about discipline and stuff, but he's an ass.
I love it, George.
Way to sum it up, George. Yeah, you got right to the point. I don't think the games matter either. I don't think
those games. Yeah. I mean, come on.
The appearance of discipline doesn't matter. You know what discipline is? I believe it's not, you know, you correct me, and please correct me, mm-hmm, if I'm wrong. I don't believe the discipline on a team is cracking the whip and you guys are going to be in bed at this time and we're not going to have games. I believe discipline is this is how we work. This is what we do when we go to work. This is how we practice. This is what we do in the meeting rooms. This is how we pay attention. I think that's the kind of discipline that teams need. I think that's the kind of discipline this team gets from Sean McDermott now. I don't think anything to do with games in the locker room.
None of that stuff. When people try to come in and they bring like a militant type of style, you have to remember these are grown men here. You have some rookies that you might be able to get through to that way, but you have veterans who have been here for a certain amount of time, and guys are like, look, man, you are not my father. You are not technically, you hold the title of a coach, but I probably make more money than you, you know? So, and I have a family just like you have a family. So you can come in here and try to preach all that stuff if you want to, but it's probably not going to get through. I think, like I said earlier, what Coach McDermott has is a good balance of understanding the family values, understanding his players, understanding what they need. But then also, and his discipline part of his, you know, what he brings is his regiment, his process, all of that stuff. Guys, this is how you get it done. We are going to do it this way. It's not coming in just yelling at guys. It's not really coming in, I don't really care about the guys. All I care about is winning. No, that's not discipline. You're talking about grown men here. We're not talking about high school football. We're not even talking about college football. We're talking about the NFL. You're dealing with grown men with different personalities, different egos that make a lot more money than you as a coach a lot of times. You have to come in and you have to have a balance of understanding your players. And a player can tell when you don't care. A player can tell, this dude doesn't really care about me. I mean, players already had that mentality that coaches don't really care. They just want to win games anyway. So when you come in and you're actually that way, forget you. I'm not playing for you. I'm playing for money right now. I'm playing to get paid. I get paid on Wednesdays, Tuesdays, Fridays, whatever it is. That's what I'm playing for my career. I'm not playing for you because you don't even care about me.
All right, we got a lot more to talk about on this topic and others, including the topic of who you are going to root for the most on Sunday in the championship games. We're going to get a look at the championship games in depth with Greg Cosell from NFL Matchup on ESPN. He's standing by to join us next, so come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Sports Radio Network. Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Bills Brain Trust is getting set to head south to Mobile, Alabama next week for the Senior Bowl. They'll be looking at some of the senior prospects in this April's NFL draft. We'll have coverage of it. Our man Chris Brown will be there live starting next Tuesday through Thursday with Senior Bowl coverage. The New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick today deflected questions about quarterback Tom Brady's injured right hand. Said, "We gave out the injury report yesterday. We will update it today." Asked if he is concerned about Brady playing in the championship game against the Jaguars, Belichick said, "I don't know. We'll see." Veteran backup Brian Hoyer took all the reps in practice yesterday. Jaguars and New England kick off Conference Sunday title games with their game at 3.05 p.m. Gillette Stadium. The Jacksonville Jaguars with their 12-6 record against the New England Patriots at 14-3. Following that, 6:40 kickoff scheduled, the Minnesota Vikings and the Philadelphia Eagles for the NFC title at Lincoln Financial Field. The Steelers yesterday replaced Todd Haley, elevating quarterbacks coach Randy Fichtner to offensive coordinator. He spent the last 11 seasons under Mike Tomlin as the wide receivers coach for Pittsburgh, and the past 8 years as quarterback coach with Ben Roethlisberger. Randy Fichtner, the new offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Buffalo Sabres home tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock, a kids' day at KeyBank Center as they play the Dallas Stars. The Sabres erased 3 one-goal deficits last night, but ultimately lost to the Rangers on a late goal. And Robin Leonard came up with 29 saves in that game. Kyle Okposo and Rasmus Ristolainen with power play goals. Justin Falk added his first goal of the season. Sabres have announced that they've recalled forward Nicholas Baptiste from the Rochester Americans. His second stint with the Buffalo Sabres appeared in 4 games for the team in November. He was Buffalo's third-round pick in the 2013 NHL draft. College basketball all over the place locally tonight. St. Bonaventure plays at Davidson tonight at 7 o'clock, the first of their home-and-home series. Canisius plays at Manhattan, and the UB Bulls play at Western Michigan. The Bulls looking to build their win streak to 7 with a game at Western Michigan tonight. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, the football over here, but the football in full swing all over America with the championship games coming up on Sunday. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, happy to have our regular Friday guest, Greg Cosell. He is analyst and producer of ESPN NFL Matchup, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. Greg, it's John Murphy and Donald up here in Buffalo. How are you doing today?
Gentlemen, how you doing? You getting a heat wave up there?
A little bit, 25
it's sunny.
Degrees.
It's sunny today, it is sunny. Though, Greg.
It's
so
nice up here.
We're not complaining.
It's a heat wave. It's 25. Yeah. I'm hoping when I go to Minneapolis in a couple of weeks, there's a heat wave and maybe it's 15.
Yeah, it's a little bit colder there.
Minneapolis is a little bit colder than Buffalo.
So we got that going for us.
Yeah.
Good. Hey, Greg, the offensive news here in Buffalo dealt with the announcement Sunday that the Bills have hired a new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, who has a little bit of a track record in the NFL as a coordinator, but most of his time spent under the tutelage of Bill Belichick, New England. Do you have any thoughts on what we might expect from him or what kind of offensive coordinator he might be?
I think more of what you'll probably expect. He's been with Belichick for quite a while, a number of years, and so I think what you normally see with that is you see a lot of different personnel groups. You see a lot of different formations, particularly when you're in base personnel, meaning let's say you have a fullback on the field or two tight ends. You'll see a lot of different formation looks. You'll see a lot of shifts, a lot of motions. I think that's pretty much what he's probably learned from Bill Belichick, and it's been real successful in New England as a way to get people open in the pass game, to define the reads and the throws for the quarterback. I think he did a bunch of that at Alabama. So I'm sure that that's in his mind. And, you know, again, there's obviously some things to figure out in Buffalo as far as personnel. I guess they have a decision to make on the quarterback. But I think that's what you'll see just from a general philosophical perspective.
We were talking, Donald and I, this week about how the first question that Brian Daboll would have, you would think, or any offensive coordinator candidate would be, what are your plans at quarterback, right? You'd have to have at least a sense about that before you took the Buffalo job.
I'm sure he wanted to get back in the league, and now he's a coordinator, and hey, that's a nice position. But look, they drafted Nathan Peterman last year, not high, 6th round, I believe. Obviously, he came in this year and did not play well and then one opportunity, and he was an easy sort of rip for everybody. But I think it's pretty evident that they don't feel Tyrod Taylor is the future under this coaching staff. So now we get into what are they going to do as far as the draft, because they had a good season. They're not going to get a high pick, but if I'm not mistaken, you guys would know this better than I. Don't the Bills have 6 of the first 90 picks?
Five in the first 5 rounds. They traded one away to get Kelvin Benjamin.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's right, that's right. So, I mean, I guess if they choose to, maybe they can package, but if not, they're not likely to be able to draft one of the quarterbacks that are likely to be viewed as top five or top 10 picks. I guess we'll have to wait and see. A lot of that changes once coaches and get involved in watching these quarterbacks on tape, but they're not likely to get one of those guys, which doesn't mean you can't get a quarterback in the top 40 or the top 50.
You know, Greg, it's interesting to me because I think they're going to end up drafting one, but obviously it's still up in the air if they will sign Tyrod Taylor back or not. And you look at Brian Daboll, who's coming up from Alabama, who was just working with mobile type of quarterbacks. So he might come in and say, I can actually work with this quarterback.
No question. I mean, clearly he played with Jalen Hurts all season long, except for pretty much for the second half of that championship game. And obviously has a good feel for running offense with that kind of quarterback. You can't run as much as in the NFL as he was able to do in college. The game is just not like that. But he certainly has experience with it. And, you know, it's always easy to say you need a new quarterback, guys. I mean, we've heard a lot of teams say that. A lot of fan bases say that. But then you got to think of who's going to replace him. You know, it's always easy to say, oh, well, Tyrod Taylor's not the guy. Well, that's great. But then who's going to play quarterback?
Yeah. Greg Cosell joins us, executive producer, analyst of NFL matchup on ESPN this weekend. Hey, before we look at this weekend's matchups, Greg, just a quick look back at last weekend and some of the divisional
sure.
round games. How did the Jacksonville Jaguars go from a team that struggled to score one touchdown against the Buffalo Bills the week before, go to a team that put up 45 points at Pittsburgh? What did they do something different schematically, or what was going on there?
No, they pretty much line up and play the same way all the time. Although what was very interesting, I think their first series said a lot. They started the game, guys, with a Leonard Fournette 5-yard run, and then they ran three consecutive pass plays, all play action, two of them boot action, very simple throws, all built off the run game, low-risk throws that anybody could complete, and they got Bortles a little bit comfortable. But overall, they ran the ball well. I think they moved the Steelers' front group quite a bit in the game. So they were able to sort of play their game, get into the flow of their game, which they couldn't really do against Buffalo because Fournette, I mean, if you take away, I think, a run he had late in the game, which was maybe 10, 12 yards, they could not get Fournette going at all against Buffalo.
Now, Greg, for me, and I've actually made a bold prediction that they that they'll beat the Patriots. And we all know Bill Belichick will take away what you do best, especially if you're so limited at one part of your
yep.
game. And we know they're limited. They like to run the ball, and they will keep running into a brick wall until they chip away at it. Do you feel like the Jacksonville Jaguars match up with the Patriots in a good way? Because I feel like they have the DBs to match up with those receivers. They have linebackers who are fast to match up with Gronk. And I feel like the Patriots' run defense is not that strong. So what do you think about that?
Well, you hit it right on the head. The game comes down to their defense. Because if they can't keep the Patriots from scoring, then what they want to do on offense, Donald, won't happen. Because they're a team that plays four-quarter offense. They really don't make that many big plays in the pass game. They're counting on being able to run Fournette 20 to 25 times in a close game that they win in kind of a game of attrition. So it's really on their defense. So the Patriots will know this, and I think what the Patriots will try to do are a couple of things. They'll go with a lot of quick game stuff, three-step drops, five-step drops. Now, in order to stay that way, you've got to stay ahead of the sticks. But that totally negates the pass rush, number one. Number two, I think they'll use a lot of shifts, motions, a lot of formation variation, and a base personnel, because that will take away the aggressiveness on the perimeter, the jams, the you know, disrupting of the routes. That's what they're going to try to prevent Jacksonville from doing. And if they can do that and move the ball in the pass game, look, it's funny how when you get to the playoffs, how they throw the football. Last week, Brady dropped back 53 times. He was not sacked once.
Wow. I was thinking about last week's Jacksonville game at Pittsburgh, and what a good job. You know, obviously they run the ball. I think you guys, Greg, come up with the stat that no one has run the ball more on, or only one team has run the ball more on first down than Jacksonville this season. But when they
yeah.
do that successfully, then they get a play like the pass to Tommy Bohannon for a touchdown,
yeah.
set up perfectly by their strong run game, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a 22 personnel play that was straight I formation with the fullback Bohannon. They'd been in that I formation a number of times. It's a staple formation for them. And then you can run a play like that. No question. That's a sort of an old West Coast play. Mm-hmm. That's what they try to do. Look, Bortles, they scored a lot of points. Bortles did not throw for a ton of yards. I don't even think he threw 30 passes. That's the way they want to play if the game can play out that way. It was a very odd game because even if you thought Jacksonville had a chance, no one's saying they're going to win 45-42. Just like this week, if you believe Jacksonville, as Donald does, has a chance to win, Donald, I don't think you're thinking about this as a really high-scoring game, are you?
No, not at all. I don't see Jacksonville putting up 30-something points on the Patriots' defense. I think it would have to be a low-scoring game. But answer me this. Who do you think they will match up with Gronk?
Well, here's the issue. Contrary to what a lot of people believe, they're not a predominant man-to-man defense. They're a zone-based defense. Now, that doesn't mean they never play man. Of course they play man. But then it comes down to what personnel New England has on the field. So let's say New England lines up with three wide receivers, okay? This is a team in Jacksonville that plays only nickel, five defensive backs. They don't play dime. So everybody's saying, well, it could be Jalen Ramsey. Well, if you line up Jalen Ramsey on Gronk, who's playing the third wide receiver?
Gotcha.
You know, then you have other issues. Could it be Miles Jack, given that he's athletic and 245 pounds? It could be. The player they've used all season long as their tight end matchup when they've gone with cover one, meaning single high safety, but man-to-man, has been the safety, Tayshaun Gibson. So do they continue to do that? Some might say that's a mismatch in favor of the Patriots. But the important point is they're not a predominant man-to-man defense. So we'll see if they step away from the way they've played most of the season.
We anticipate that Brady will play. That's obviously there's some uncertainty about that now. But that would dramatically change, I think, if he can't play, right? What the way the Jacksonville Jaguars play defense or no?
Do you guys really think Brady's not going to play?
No, I don't. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to play.
That's what everybody's hoping.
Yeah.
The only way he won't play is if he truly couldn't grip a football.
Right.
I think let's go in the assumption that he will play. I mean, obviously, if he doesn't play, that changes, you know, everything. But my guess is he'll be on the field.
Now, you talked about them because the Patriots will get the ball out of their hands so fast. We have seen teams in the playoffs, though, be able to get to Brady. And we all know if you can get to Brady – that's where their offense will struggle. We saw it a couple weeks ago or about a month ago with the Dolphins when they were physical with those receivers and they were getting to Brady up the middle.
Yeah.
They were struggling. So I feel like even – I'm trying to make a case for my argument for me here.
You're struggling to make that case.
I feel like with Calais Campbell and those guys up in the middle, they can get to Brady.
Well, I think that's where the coverage and the pass rush have to work together because you've got to disrupt the routes. And that's why I said it's possible they could play more man in this game to disrupt routes because part of getting pressure in the quick game is that Brady hits that back foot and he wants to deliver the ball and there's nowhere to go with the football. In some ways, look, Pittsburgh's passing game and New England's passing game are worlds apart.
Right.
But the perfect example was that Telvin Smith fumble recovery touchdown where they did such a great job in their zone coverage concept. Ben had nowhere to go, and then the pressure wins late. Ultimately, that's what you're trying to do with Brady. You're trying to take away the decisive, quick game throws so that he has to hold the ball because he's no threat, obviously, running.
Right.
Hey, Greg, what's the tougher running back matchup issue for Jacksonville, Deion Lewis or James White?
Well, Deion Lewis has become sort of their runner, and James White is primarily a receiver. So that's the other issue is how New England chooses to play. One thing about there have been a couple of sort of minor chinks in Jacksonville's armor defensively. They have not been real strong stopping the run in their nickel. So could they line up with three wide receivers, New England that is, and run Deion Lewis? Sure. They haven't been real strong playing the pass out of their base defense. So that's why I mentioned New England using two tight ends and keeping them in their base defense. So I think Lewis is probably the bigger threat as a runner, Murph.
All right. I'm tired of talking about the Patriots. let's flip it over and to the other game. The Vikings, Eagles, Case Keenum, Nick Foles. I mean, I don't even know what to ask you in this game. We're going to watch this game, but I don't know what to think here.
You mean you're not getting ready? Well, apparently you're getting ready for a Blake Bortles Super Bowl, O'Donnell.
I am. Blake Bortles versus one of those quarterbacks.
There you go. Well, you know, again, as in most of these games with this kind of importance, there's a lot of different things you could talk about. You know, let's start with the Vikings on defense, first of all. I mean, they had an historic third down defense. All year long, they've given up 53 third down conversions, including the playoffs. Think about that. Yeah. 53 all season long. So if you start to get into third downs, and particularly third and long against this defense, that will be a really tough go for Nick Foles. And it will cause some issues in protection for the Eagles and how they want to go about it, because the Vitae matchup, the left tackle Vitae against Everson Griffin, will be a problem. So I think first down is the critical down for the Eagles. I think that's where Doug Peterson has to earn his money this week, and I think he has to be really creative and really multiple and see if they can orchestrate and create some explosive plays on first down.
Now, we know the Eagles, I don't think that they would want to put the game on Nick Foles' shoulders unless they have to. They have good running backs there. How do they actually match up in the run game versus that Vikings run defense?
Well, again, it's a really good defense. The Eagles have as multiple a run game as any team in the league in terms of all the different run game concepts. And I think you'll see a lot of them. You'll see almost all of them because they're going to have to generate something in the run game. The other thing the Eagles have been very good at, and you will see it in this game for sure, is they're a very good screen team, and they get to it in many different ways. So what they're going to have to do really in this game, Donald, is they just have to try to stay ahead of the sticks. Usually you don't get big explosive plays against Minnesota. Not that you don't try, but you usually don't get them. So you've got to try to at least stay ahead of the sticks. You know, as I said, if you get caught up in too many long yardage situations against this defense, it's a really tough go. They can pressure the quarterback. And Nick Foles, the longer he's in the pocket, the less effective he is.
Let me flip it around a little bit to Minnesota's versus the Eagles defense. And what are the Vikings, what is their best course of action to deal with Fletcher Cox, who seems to have the ability to take over games, Greg? What do you think?
Yeah, he's a great player. Great player. Well, you know, Minnesota's been very balanced all year. Believe it or not, guys, in the regular season, we were talking about Jacksonville a few moments ago, the team that actually ran the ball the most on first down this year, Jacksonville was second. Minnesota was first. So Minnesota wants to run the ball. They're going to stay balanced. They don't run it great, but they want to run the ball. And then they're another example of a team that if they can get into third and manageable, Pat Shurmur is really, really good with his concepts, with his two and three man concepts against man-to-man coverage that define reads and throws for Case Keenum really well. And one thing Keenum is really good at is those second reaction plays, those improvisational plays. And that's, if you're playing man, that becomes hard because you have to plaster to receivers. If you're playing zone, it's hard as well because normally the longer the quarterback has the ball against zone, some void shows up in the coverage.
Hey, we didn't even ask you about the miracle play that put Minnesota in this situation, Greg. What, as you break that play down, what did you see happening there? How improbable was that play?
Well, it's one of the few times, I think, because I've seen a little bit of football in my time, guys, as you can appreciate, one of the few times where I really got excited because it was, first of all, it was incredibly surprising.
Yeah.
But they ran two sort of out routes within 6 yards of one another, Diggs deeper and Jarius right in front of him. And obviously Marcus Williams was the deep safety. Let's put aside Marcus Williams. You know, he's taken enough blame. We know that he has to make that tackle. But what I thought was interesting is Ken Crawley, who was the corner to the same side, he was actually sitting on the underneath out route by Jarius Wright at about the 50-yard line. To me, and again, I don't know how things are coached, but to me, if you're Ken Crawley, I don't know why you'd be concerned about the underneath out route catching the ball at the 50-yard line, because if he catches it and goes out of bounds there, I mean, that's they're not in field goal range. So I don't think the ball, to me, should be thrown over Ken Crawley's head, but it was.
What should Crawley have done?
I thought he should have dropped back and helped take away the deeper out by Diggs so that the ball couldn't have been thrown over him.
Right.
Williams theoretically is not going to try to make a play on the ball, theoretically, because you know, he's just, the last thing you want to do, Donald knows this, the last thing you want to do there is try to make a play on the ball, and then you miss.
Right.
What you're trying to do there is make the tackle, obviously, which he didn't do, but he's not going to make a play on the ball.
Greg, we've got two championship games this weekend, let's face it, that lack star power in many respects, other than Brady and the Patriots. From a football purist standpoint, when you look at these two matchups, Vikings-Eagles and Jaguars-Patriots, who do you look to be the shining stars from a strategic standpoint? Who are the best coaches in this weekend's games, do you think?
Murph, I think they're fascinating games tactically. I mean, the Eagles and Vikings, barring turnovers or special teams plays, has a bit of an old school feel to it. Two really good defenses, two physical teams. You know, I think that game has that, you know, it almost smacks of a 70s game, 1970s game. I think it's a really intriguing game tactically and with good defense. And then, you know, you always have the Patriots, who are fascinating tactically, as you guys know, and the Jaguars, who have a defined way of playing football. The question is, can that defined way beat New England? Because they're not a team that really steps away very much at all from how they play. They have an identity, and it's what they do essentially every week. So I find these games tactically fascinating.
It's funny because people in my generation will probably say, man, this looks like a boring matchup. People who have watched football for a very, very long time would say, man, this is, like you just said, this is a fascinating game because it will have an old school type of feel. It's going to be a lot of running the ball. Case Keenum, he's played very well this year, but I think they want to run the ball in Minnesota as well. And then you look at the Jaguars, they want to run the ball. The only team that people think really like to pass the ball, and they might pass the ball a lot in this game, is the Patriots, but they also like to run the ball. So it just seems like just old school football this weekend.
No, I agree. And I think people, particularly because of college football as well, now people are used to the ball being tossed all around and high scoring games. And you know, that was so great about the Jaguars game last week. No one expected that.
Right.
Well, I don't mind old school football, Craig. I know Donald is a little bit
a receiver.
Well, you know, Donald Murph is the young man here. You and I, we've been around a little longer.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. And Donald reminds me that every 5 minutes or so in case I forget. Hey, Greg, thanks for this.
I wasn't going to mention any age, Murph, so don't worry about it.
I didn't say any age. I just said generational.
Yeah, well, it's definitely. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk next week. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. Mm-hmm.
Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup. You can catch it all weekend long tomorrow and Sunday on ESPN. And senior producer of NFL Films joins us on the line to break down the matchups. He's right. You know, I mean, you're looking for stars. You're looking for people who pop out of the screen. This is not the weekend for you. If you're looking for interesting strategic and tactical maneuvers, these are two games to watch. And it strikes me also the way he describes Jacksonville, and we kind of knew this. They can't afford to fall behind.
Oh, no.
And they got to be able to run the ball, right?
They got to be able to run the ball. This might be – both of these games could end up being like the Bills game, field position. Who makes a big play? Low-scoring games, run the ball. It could truly end up that way. And like I said, a lot of people around my age would say, man, I remember seeing people tweet out, this game is boring. When the Bills were playing the Jaguars, this game is boring. It was boring.
Yeah.
You could see that in both of these games this week.
You could. Could be fun to watch. All right, we're going to get back to our discussion about a variety of topics, including who are you rooting for this week? Who do you want to see win this week? Give us a call. The lines are open. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back, John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio on a sunny day in Orchard Park. It's kind of a nice day, Donald. The sun is shining, 25 degrees. Qualifies for a nice day in January here in these parts.
That does qualify.
Go ahead.
I just like when the sun is shining.
Me too.
What a
difference.
Yesterday and the last couple of days, it's been snowing. So when the sun comes out, it's like, man, it could be cold, but when the sun is out, I'm good.
Yeah, and it's good. It's good here today. Thanks to Greg Cosell for joining us. You can catch his act on ESPN, the NFL Matchup Show with excuse me, Roger Worski and Louis Riddick, right? Good
Louis
show.
Riddick, yep.
Let's take a phone call here. Don't have a name, but you say all coaches are different. Who we got on the line here? Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
What up, though?
Yes. Yeah, you guys there?
We here.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. Yeah, Donald, you're my buddy. I really like the way you
see where this is going. On
things, but I have
to but with there's you. A butt coming here. Is that what you're expecting?
Right.
I have to disagree with you on the Marone thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you talk on the radio a lot of times, and we're talking about players, you say the players are going to go where the money is, and there's nothing wrong with that. I have no problem with that. But I think Marone did the same thing. Now, I don't know if he broke his contract or whether he was within his contract, but if he was within his contract to do that and he was chasing money, it's hard to argue with that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't like Doug Marone, but I do like him as a coach, and I do like him because he's a Syracuse person, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I did agree with you on and do agree with you on is Jacksonville. And you and I are kind of in the minority there. But I look at this as everybody else that's been talking about it looks at it. You got Coughlin and you got Belichick. Now, if you guys remember, Super Bowl 25, Bill Parcells held the ball for 19 minutes and won the ball game. Now, who was on his sideline as assistant coaches? Coughlin and Belichick. What you're going to find is a real old-school game there, but I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be real good. In the other game, I don't care too much about the other game because I'm an AFC person. I was an AFL person before the merger. So I think that the Bills would be very wise to check out how Coughlin uses Bortles in this game because I see, even though they're not the same kind of quarterbacks, I see a resemblance between him and how they should use Tyrod if they plan to keep Tyrod. And by the way, I think they ought to keep him. I don't think they ought to let that guy go. I've seen so many people go from Buffalo and 2 or 3 years later they're doing headstands, you know. I just don't want to see it anymore. And I think I don't want to take all your time up here, but I really do like Tyrod. I think he's a hard worker. I think he will come into his own if he's got the right people to work with. Okay, guys.
Okay, there's an awful lot there, Donald. Do you care to dive into any of that? Thanks.
he started off with Doug Marone,
yeah,
and the way he left.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a. If you're chasing the money, go get your money. I tell players all the time, get your money, get your money. So if that's the reason why you left, that's totally fine. My issue with Doug Marone, and it's hard for me to even have an issue because I wasn't here with him, but from talking to so many people around the building that have told me different stories about him, that's where my issue lies.
Yeah, and I agree, and I've said this early in the show. It's not his departure, but it was his tenure here that bothered me, and the way he handled people, the way he handled his team, his approach, his demeanor. I think it was unproductive to being a good head coach. Maybe it's different now. Marcel Darius will tell you he's a different man. He's a changed man down there. Maybe. We'll see. Just because they beat the Bills 10-3 and somehow scored all those points against Pittsburgh doesn't mean that Doug Marone has all the answers now, by the way. Really,
yeah.
Doesn't.
No.
I mean,
he doesn't.
There's some luck involved. There's some good drafting involved. I have no doubt that Tom Coughlin, who the caller referenced earlier, I have no doubt that he sets a pretty positive, good tone for Marone in that entire organization. I'm a huge Tom Coughlin fan.
And Tom Coughlin was the reason why Calais Campbell and some of those other free agents like A.J. Boye and those guys actually came out to Jacksonville because Tom Coughlin, and we've talked to different national reporters who have said the same thing. Tom Coughlin is the reason why you got those guys. And those guys, especially Calais Campbell, is a big reason why you're sitting where you are right now in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah. And Coughlin, I'm sure, keeps Marone on track, keeps him, you know, between the guardrails, doesn't let him get too high, too low. I think he's an important element in what they're doing down there and the success they've had down there. I have no doubt about that when it comes to Tom Coughlin.
Could be a change. Tom Coughlin had a bad reputation, though. If you remember when his days in Jacksonville, and then when he first went to New
tough
York.
Tough on players.
Yeah, he was tough on players, and the players are like, oh, man, you know, we would like him to ease up a little bit. And the reports were that he did ease up as he got later into his career or his tenure in New York, that he did ease up on those players. He won 2 Super Bowls. So, I don't know, maybe he talked to Doug Marone and said, hey, man, you gotta ease up on these guys. Who knows if he's changed? I just – from what I've heard about him, it's hard for me to believe that he has changed that much now where the players are like, oh, man, We love playing for this guy. He's a player's coach. We love it.
Yeah. You know, doesn't get any credit at all down there, at least publicly, is David Caldwell, the general manager, who's like Brian Daboll. He's a Western New Yorker. He's right. A St. Francis graduate. And he deserves, you know, yeah, they've drafted well. They've got a great defense made up of all those first-round draft picks. Guess who was picking the names off the board? It was David Caldwell. Here is Abe calling from New York. Hello, Abe. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Outstanding.
I listen to your show often, and every chance I get. So here's my philosophy about who to root for.
Yes.
I am an AFC guy first. Anybody in our division, I root for.
Okay.
Until we beat these damn Patriots, you know, I'm just going to keep going with the Patriots.
So you are rooting for the Patriots because they're in the division with the Bills?
Exactly. Hey, you know, that's our division supremacy.
Mm.
Not us, but it's the Patriots. So that's how I go about it. A lot of people are not happy with my friends. They say, well, how could you root for Brady?
How could you?
You know, he's a good player, and until somebody comes and beats him, I'm going to root for him, unless the Bills beat him. So far, 17 years in, we haven't been able to do it. So that's my philosophy.
Okay. I don't know that there's a lot of folks up here or Bills fans who would agree with you, Abe, but I hear what you're saying.
I just love the accent. I love the accent there. That was great.
Here is Ken calling from Buffalo. Hi, Ken. Welcome.
Hello. How are you doing?
Great. Good.
Hey, I got a couple of things. First thing I want to know is how come you're not making a big deal out of a fantasy that we'll never live is the people of Minnesota get a chance to see their team in their home field.
Mm.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
No, it hasn't happened before, and we know how this works, Ken. You got to get a new stadium. And these days, you got to get a new stadium to get a Super Bowl. The Vikings just got a new stadium. It would be great to have a Super Bowl here in Buffalo if they got a new stadium. That would be a ways out, though.
We can't even begin to fantasize until the dome goes up, though. You know, I mean, secondly, you know how you said nobody is – protected. Well, I think you guys ought to boot Kelso down to the field and bring Donald up into the booth with you.
Why would you do that to Kelso?
You want him to be a coach?
Tell him to go on the other sideline and get near the referees in there.
Right. All right.
You guys are so smooth, and especially when Tasker comes on, I picture you guys sitting at the bar just talking it up and Tasker bringing in another picture. You guys get along so well.
Well, thank you, Ken. I wish he did bring a pitcher in.
I don't think the three of us have been at a bar together. Me, you, and Tasker.
No. No. Maybe we should try it.
He was talking about the Super Bowl stuff there. Yeah. We should try it, though. We should. But he was talking about the Super Bowl stuff. We know how this stuff works. You get a stadium, you get a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Would that happen here? Would they bring a Super Bowl? There's not enough hotels here in Buffalo right now.
I don't know. I don't really. It's hard to imagine, number one. And to be honest with you, Ken, I think if they built a new stadium here, if they build a new stadium here, it wouldn't be a dome. I just don't see that happening.
I don't know. Retractable dome? Who knows?
Maybe a retractable dome. I mean, you never know with so many domes going up and Eagles and all of that stuff. You never know. You could end up with the dome here retractable. But I think the weather and everything, as we saw in that Colts game, that's something that people have grown accustomed to here and want to use to their advantage.
People enjoyed that game. Yeah. You don't want it every week. And you don't get it every week, by the way. That was an
anomaly.
Right.
You don't get it every week. But you also had the whole aspect of when the schedule came out, fans complaining about, we got three home games in December. I'm a season ticket holder. I don't want to go to three home games in December. Now, they ended up being meaningful games, but people were complaining about the weather, complaining about how cold it is in December. I don't want to have to go to so many games in December when it's so cold.
Nobody complained once the games were here, though. Nobody complained about the Colts game. People who were there probably mark it down as one of the most memorable games they've ever been to.
Right, exactly. You know? So at least if you get a retractable, you can figure out, all right, it's going to snow, let's use it to our advantage.
Yeah.
If it's just going to be cold, maybe we keep the dome closed. Who knows?
Who are you rooting for on Sunday? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Here until 3 as we wrap up the week, this week of the championship games. That's what our topic of the day is. You can join us on the line. Tell not who you think is going to win, but who you're rooting for, who you're really pulling for. That is our Twitter poll that's been up for a couple of hours now. Which team are you really going to be rooting for to win this Sunday in the championship games? On Twitter, 55% of you say, give me the Minnesota Vikings. That's my team this Sunday. 30% of you say the Jacksonville Jaguars, the team that eliminated the Bills from the playoffs just two short weeks ago. 10% of you say the Philadelphia Eagles. 5% say the New England Patriots. What do you think? The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
This thing would be, if Doug Marrone wasn't the coach of the Jaguars, it would be Jacksonville and runaway.
Instead of Minnesota.
Yeah, instead
it
of Minnesota.
Probably would, yeah.
We got this tweet in. I like this one. Afternoon, gentlemen. This is from Mike Camarado. Afternoon, gentlemen. I honestly can't bring myself to root for Jacksonville or New England, so the referees will get my vote.
Well, who's the ref? Maybe that's the way to go.
Who is the ref?
I got to hear somewhere. Yeah, do you really root for refs? Do you root for injury? Is that the way you go? I want somebody
some
getting hurt.
Do root for injury.
I don't care
like,
who it is.
How do you root for injury? That's rough.
Cleet Blakeman is your referee for Jacksonville and New England. Ed Hockley for the Vikings and the Eagles.
What do you know about Cleet?
He's okay. He's like Hockley 2.0. You know, he's got big biceps. And,
gotcha.
Yeah.
We had him this year, right?
We've had them all. Yeah, had them. Feels like we've had them all. We've had enough of them, all these officials. Who are you rooting for this week? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Working a call here from Ken in Charlotte. Go ahead, Ken. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Good.
Kind of off topic here. I'm going to talk about Tyrod for a second. I'm going to try and get it all out as quick as I can.
Okay.
Up and listen. Everybody feels like, you know, we should move on from Tyrod, media, fans. I don't feel like that is exactly what we need to do. If we listen to Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, they're talking about building a team and it takes time. Tyrod was basically not a franchise quarterback, but a bridge quarterback. We have yet to draft that quarterback, that franchise quarterback that has that label or, you know, the quarterback in waiting. So Tyrod's job isn't done. Instead of trading for Alex Smith, giving up more assets or, you know, signing somebody on the free agent market, the team already loves this guy, supports him. The coach praises him for his work ethic. He does all the right things. It's just when the lights cut on, he just, you know, seems to be absent at times. Doesn't come through with the plays or make the throws or the reads. So I feel like Tyrod time, he hasn't fulfilled exactly that bridge purpose yet. He hasn't filled his purpose yet. So, you know, we still need to draft a quarterback. As much as it's like nails scratching across the chalkboard and we're tired of seeing Tyrod, we should just move on. It's still a process that has to be fulfilled. That's why they say, I guess, you know, it's a process.
You make a good point, Ken. I wanted Donald to weigh in on this, too. What you're saying, Ken, essentially is, if he is a bridge quarterback, the bridge isn't complete yet. And I think there's some truth to that. And like you, and look, I'm just starting to get my arms around the quarterback dilemma, what the Bills should do. Deep in my gut, I feel the Bills should draft a quarterback early this year. I really believe that. But maybe that guy's not ready to play right away. And I don't know who that guy is yet, by the way, where the Bills sit and who they'll have an opportunity to get. And if that's the case, somebody's going to have to play this year if the rookie quarterback isn't ready to play, if the premium draft pick quarterback isn't ready to play, and you don't want to force him in there. So who is it then?
Right.
You spend a lot of money on another free agent? I don't think so. Ken's point is not – look, a lot of us have Tyrod fatigue, let's put it that way. And a lot of us are disappointed about the way he played at Jacksonville. I put myself in that camp. But Ken's point is not crazy. Maybe the
His
bridge
isn't
complete yet.
I've been on record as saying you should keep Tyrod Taylor here. Now, I would think Tyrod Taylor is due for what is
it's
his
a
raise?
$6 million bonus on March 17th, I believe.
So his base salary, which I don't have here, I'll look it up in a second. He's going to get a little more money next year. you're going to pay some money for a free agent quarterback, whether it's Alex Smith, whoever it will be, even if it's like unless it's a Teddy Bridgewater. But if it's Alex Smith, Sam Bradford, who's might be out there on the market, he might want to get out of Minnesota if they decide to go with Case Keenum as their guy moving forward. You're going to pay some money for one of these quarterbacks. That's just the quarterback market in today's football. So I don't know if Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean would like to pay that money for a bridge quarterback and be almost dead last in passing. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. You are 31st, 32nd in passing almost every year for the last couple of years. And so with that being said, they feel like we are too one-dimensional, even with Tyrod Taylor as a bridge quarterback. We can get another bridge quarterback in here and actually be, maybe even if it's just 20th in passing or something like that, and be maybe able to move the ball a little bit better.
According to SpotRac, Tyrod would earn a base salary of $10 million in 2018 and a roster bonus of $6 million. That's due a couple of days around the league year, March 14th.
Right.
A cap hit of $18 million, dead cap value of $8.6 million. So that's a lot.
People talk about
$18 million.
Yeah, yeah, and people talk about
to be 31st in the league. That's a very good point.
Exactly, to be that to be 31st in the league. No, it's not all on him at all. But to be 31st in the league, people would say, "Well, you can pay Alex Smith is not going to command that type of money. You can pay Alex Smith $18 million. You won't be. He played almost. He didn't have his good moments when they really, really needed it." But the dude was playing at an MVP level early in the season. Yeah. They weren't almost dead last in passing where you've been for so long. Why don't you just give him that money? Let him be the bridge quarterback until this draft pick comes along and is your guy moving forward.
A lot to weigh. We're not really there yet, are we? I don't feel like I'm there yet to make those decisions. We'll get there. We're not going to talk about quarterbacks from now until September 12th, but we'll get there. And as the options begin to emerge, as the free agency landscape clears up, as the draft gets a little bit closer, I mean, Josh Allen's number one on Mel Kiper's board. I think some of us were hoping Josh Allen might be available to the Bills late first or in the second. So, that, you know, does Mel Kiper change? No, he didn't change things, but it's certainly the opinions on him change. Long way to go before that quarterback decision comes, I believe.
A lot of research to do on those young guys, too.
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
But it does, for me, it doesn't matter whoever the young guy is. I don't think, and I could be totally wrong. You never truly know. But I don't think there's any guy coming out. As good as they said, man, you got a good class of quarterbacks coming out. I don't think they've said, this guy's ready to go into the NFL next year and be the franchise quarterback and take that team to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't think any of those guys right now have that type of ability. Now, they could come in, go into the crazy perfect system for him, have an offensive line, have some weapons outside, and have a great season. But for now, I think you need to have a bridge quarterback, whether it's Tyrod, whether it's somebody else. I don't think they want to be 31st in passing, though. That's the biggest thing.
Who are you pulling for in the games on Sunday, the two games, the championship games? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And how were these championship teams built? You know, who put together the Eagles and who put together the Vikings and who's responsible for the Jaguars' collection of talent and the Patriots? We're going to talk with Albert Breer of mmqb.si.com coming up after the top of the hour. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones here getting ready for the show. The update from here, Bills getting ready for the Senior Bowl next week. The Brain Trust will be down there in Mobile, Alabama, to look over the senior prospects. Our man Chris Brown will be there as well. Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. He'll be reporting from the Senior Bowl next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Meantime, in New England, they're getting set for the AFC Championship game, and Patriots coach Bill Belichick spent the morning deflecting questions about the readiness of quarterback Tom Brady and his injured right hand. Belichick said, "We gave out the injury report yesterday. We will update it later today." Asked if he was concerned about Brady's availability, Belichick said, "I don't know. We'll see." Veteran backup quarterback Brian Hoyer took the repetitions for New England in the practice on Thursday. AFC Championship game, the first of two on Sunday. 3:05 kickoff at Gillette Stadium, the Jacksonville Jaguars and the New England Patriots. The NFC game scheduled to kick off at 6:40 at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. It's the Eagles hosting the Minnesota Vikings. Quarterbacks coach Randy Fichtner was promoted to offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh late yesterday, replacing Todd Haley, who was just let go earlier this week. Fichtner has spent the last 11 seasons under Mike Tomlin as wide receivers coach and then as quarterbacks coach for Ben Roethlisberger. The Buffalo Sabres getting set to host the Dallas Stars tomorrow, 1 o'clock, a Kids Day special at KeyBank Center. The Sabres came back three times from one-goal deficits last night, but ultimately lost to the New York Rangers in New York. Kyle Okposo, Rasmus Ristolainen with power play goals. Justin Faulk scored his first goal of the season. Robin Lehner with 29 saves, but the Sabres lost at the Rangers. Host the Dallas Stars tomorrow at 1. Sabres have recalled forward Nicholas Baptiste from the Rochester Americans. He was their third-round pick in 2013. College basketball, the busy slate for the local team. St. Bonaventure on the road tonight at Davidson. The Bonnies for the first of home-and-home series with Davidson. Canisius plays at Manhattan today, and the UB Bulls look to build their win streak to 7 with a game against Western Michigan tonight, 7 o'clock at Alumni Arena. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio talking a lot about the championship games, the AFC game, the NFC game, and joining us on the Subway Fresh Take line to talk more about it, the senior NFL reporter for Peter King's website, the MMQB, a longtime reporter for NFL.com and the NFL Network. Happy to have Albert Breer on the line with us. Albert, John Murphy, and Donald Jones here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys.
You are in New England, right? You're in Foxborough getting ready for the AFC game, correct?
Yeah, I am. I'm not in Foxborough itself right now, but I'm in New England.
Gotcha. What's your thought on Brady's availability? What do you think? How's that going to play out the next 48 hours here?
Well, I think he's going to be out there, if you ask me. What we're going to be talking about over the next 48 hours, it really comes down to whether or not this is if it's an issue of pain management, I think that he'll be fine, and we'll see the Tom Brady that we're used to seeing out there. If it's an issue of functionality, that's something else. And I think clearly if it's the sum of a throwing hand of a quarterback, then it's something worth watching, and that's what it is. And so, you know, at this point, I think everybody's sort of waiting to see, what he's going to look like playing with it, you know. And so, we'll see whether or not he practiced today. He was very kind of coy about that. They asked, the press conference, did you practice today? And he said, well, I was out there. That doesn't mean he practiced. He was out there. It's just, lots of questions, not a lot of answers now. And, look, this is something that really has been a subject for a couple months up here where, in October he hurt his hand. He was, seen out on the field, on the game field, flexing it. There was one point in the year where it looked at least like he was picking himself up off the ground with his forearm rather than pushing off of his hand. And so there's at least reason to believe that there was an old injury there that he may have re-aggravated this week.
Brady just spoke to you guys in the media out there, right, recently? Or he just spoke to the media there?
Yeah, yeah.
And didn't have much to say about his level of participation today, right? I guess you have to wait for the official participation report?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, John, he just said he was asked to be practiced, and he said, I was out there. Now, he was out there on Thursday also for the beginning of practice. For at least the beginning of practice, and it sounds like he was out there for most of the practice, and he was listed as he did not practice. And so just because he was out there doesn't mean he practiced, and he didn't say that he actually participated in the practice. I think, and we'll see at 4 o'clock when the injury report comes out, but if he's another DNP here, that would mean that that's two straight days of not practicing following the day in which he was injured. And then I think your level of concern goes up a couple notches just because this is a guy who values practice rest.
Sure.
And never wants him off the field.
I mean, Albert, you I believe you live in Boston. Not sure about
right.
that. But, I've seen you do a lot of tweeting over the years about the Patriots. You probably cover the Patriots a lot living out there. It just seems so dramatic every week now. It's something different that they're dealing with up there. I mean, now it's his hand. I just saw, he had gloves on both of his hands in the press conference. I mean, what are we talking about here? I don't see him actually sitting out this game. It's just hard for me to believe that.
No. I mean, even if he's hurt, right? Like, let's just assume there is a functionality issue there, right? Like, let's assume there's something there. I still don't think that it's going to prevent him from at least giving it a go. Now, again, if this is a – and there are different kinds of – injuries there. There are different kinds of dislocations if it's something like that. If there's a functionality issue, then it's something that's absolutely worth watching. I mean, anybody, you don't need to be an NFL quarterback to understand that your thumb is a pretty big part of gripping a football, and your thumb is a pretty big part of being able to direct a football the right way. And so, if he didn't practice today, then I think probably he has some question about how well he's going to be able to play on Sunday. And so, look, if this was on his left hand, we'd be talking about something else.
Yeah.
It's not. It's on his right hand. And I can tell you this, almost always in these situations, when Brady's asked these questions, when he's been injured in the past, and I've covered him for 13 years now, when he's asked these questions, he'll almost always say, I'll be out there, right? Like almost always. And this time he said, we'll see. Hmm. And so, you know, I think that they are playing games to some degree, but certainly, you know, if he didn't, he took an entire day off of practice on Thursday, you know, and they could have thrown him out there for five snaps if they wanted to and listed him as limited. They chose not to do that. And so, you know, like there's definitely some reason for concern here. I don't think it's something that you could just brush aside.
With Albert Breer, who's senior NFL reporter for the MMQB. And you can add this to the list of especially recent Tom Brady drama, Albert. It's been kind of an eventful month or two for Tom Brady. Where do you see this all? Let's put the playoff run aside here. Assume they're going to have a little playoff run forthcoming. How does this all play out in the months ahead, maybe the years ahead? Are we looking at this as the way Brady's tenure in New England ends eventually, this type of thing?
No. I mean, I'll just tell you this, John. I think, you know, there are three main figures here, okay? And it's Brady, Belichick, Kraft. Kraft owns the team. He's going nowhere. Brady, of course, is the only viable long-term answer at quarterback. And I think once Jimmy Garoppolo is traded out of here, that pretty much assured that Brady's going to be here at least in 2018 and probably going forward. And that leaves Belichick, you know. And so I think this is something that's going to have to be revisited after the year between those three. I know that they're planning on revisiting it after the year. And there certainly has been a level of discomfort inside that building. And there are larger questions that need to be answered.
Right.
And look, one of them just revolves around their handling of Brady as a superstar quarterback. You know, forever and ever and ever, the way that Brady has carried himself, this is a credit to Tom, has enabled Bill and the coaching staff there to treat everybody a certain way. If you treat Tom Brady like he's the 30th guy on the roster, well, nobody has any room to complain about anything because you're treating Tom Brady that way. And he's allowed that. And he's always been kind of wanted to be one of the guys. And, you know, over the last year, we've seen him kind of venture outside of that a little bit with the TB12 method, with recruiting some other, with, you know, the guys that are running it up there for him, recruiting other players to it. And so, you know, I think that there are some things that have happened over the course of the last year that have been outside of who Tom has normally been. And I don't blame Tom at all for that, because that's using your career to set up your second career. That's using your time as a player to set up what you're going to do after football. I would never begrudge any player that, because these careers are short.
Mm-hmm.
The problem for the Patriots, of course, is that this goes outside the standards they've set forever. And what's complicated about it, if I'm the Patriots, what's complicated about it now, how are you going to tell Brady not to do that? I mean, this isn't telling a player, hey, don't stay out till 2 in the morning on a Saturday night in the off season. This is telling a player to cut it out with, you know, promote what he's going to do post-football. And so it's complicated. It's been messy. It's got potential to continue to be messy. It's something they're going to have to sit down and discuss.
Right.
And, you know, certainly I think the Jimmy Garoppolo trade adds a layer to it, because I know one of Bill's goals over the last 6-7 years was to find a way to bridge the franchise into the next era before he retires. And once they traded Jimmy Garoppolo, they basically started the clock over on that process. Now they're going to have to find another young quarterback, develop him, get him into a position where he's ready to go. And, you know, I think Bill knows it's not that easy to do that. And they were fortunate to be able to do it with Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's going to be hard to pull that off again. And I think, you know, all of that, you just add all that together, and there's been plenty of tension there in the building over what the post-Brady era is going to look like.
and certainly something they're going to have to deal with after this year.
Now, Albert, once that whole Garoppolo trade went down, we actually had Steve Tasker on, and we were talking about, okay, now that you traded Garoppolo away, you know Brady's tenure is going to come to an end here soon. I don't care what he says. It's going to be in the next couple of years. You don't have a successor to Brady. Does Belichick now just say, you know what, I don't feel like developing somebody else. I'll just go ahead, especially if they win another one this year, I'll go ahead and just walk away from this thing.
You know, I don't think it'll be after this year, but I think next year we're starting to move into that territory where 2018, 2019, I think certainly could be his final year. Again, I think he's going to be back next year. It's clear to me that, he still loves what he does. He's got that place wired in a certain way. It's very, very difficult to set up any NFL franchise that way. It will be difficult to recreate that somewhere else. So I do think this is his last NFL job. But I think he knows that over the next 3-4 years, Brady's going to try to continue to play, that Brady set that goal of playing until he's 45. And we talked about what Brady's going to do post-career. He's going to be kind of a health and lifestyle guru. Well, there's no better advertisement for Tom Brady to set up his next career than to keep playing until he's 45. So I think there's a real motivation to continue on that path from Brady. I think Bill's going to have to decide how much longer he wants to coach and how much he's willing to maybe manage what I think will be a changing environment in that building over the course of the next few years. And so I certainly think there's a possibility that Bill's gone after 18 or 19. And I will just tell you that I think if Jimmy Garoppolo were around and it were totally up to Bill, 100% up to Bill, I think there would be a serious discussion about what to do after the 2017 season. And maybe that would have been the time when they would have turned to Jimmy Garoppolo. I think Bill just knew that there was no way that he was going to be allowed to trade Tom Brady, which is, I think, part of why we are where we are.
We're with Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter for the MMQB. Albert, we called you today, got you on today to talk about your post on the MMQB about how conference championship teams were built. Within that posting, though, you had a little item about Doug Marrone and the role that Bill Belichick played in Doug Marrone getting the job at Jacksonville. Yep. Can you talk about that, their relationship, and maybe why Belichick thinks so highly of Doug Marrone?
I actually don't know where the relationship started, but they both have ties to Tom Coughlin. They both have ties to Bill Parcells. And so they're, from the same extended NFL family. So they knew each other. And, I know that what happened post-Buffalo, obviously, Doug had designs on the Jets job, doesn't wind up getting the Jets job after he opted out there in Buffalo. And from what I understand, Bill caught wind that Gus Bradley was talking to Doug Marrone about a job. And so Bill got on the phone and called up Jaguars ownership and said, hey, look, you need to bring him in. He's a good coach. I think a lot of him, I would vouch for him 100% despite what's been out there on him. So the Jags go and hire him. Then near the end of the 2016 season, the Jags, I think it was two weeks left in the season, right?
Yep.
The Jags pulled the plug on Gus Bradley, and Bill calls the Jaguars again and says, you've already got your guy. It's Doug. And, basically vouched for Doug's integrity and said that the Bills teams that he played in 2013, 2014, that were led by Doug Marrone, played the hardest of any Buffalo team that he had seen in over 20 years in the AFC East. And I know that went a long way with the Jaguars. Not to say that won him the job, but the Jaguars ownership, that family listens to Bill Belichick. They take counsel from Bill Belichick, and I think it was an important piece to Doug getting that job there, because I think any guy who's on his second chance, the way Marrone was going into his second chance there, has to explain for what happened the first time around, right? Like, that's one of the first things you're going to have to do.
Yeah.
Same way, Josh McDaniels is going to have to explain for what happened in Denver. Pat Shurmur had to explain for what happened in Cleveland. Marrone had to explain for what happened in Buffalo. And I think the Jaguars having that word from a competitor, from a direct competitor, that those Buffalo teams were very tough, that played very hard, and that were difficult to play against, I think went a long way to, I think allaying any fears that they had that the problems in Buffalo weren't fixable.
Robert, you got that story. You got your colleague Robert Klemko writing about Marcel Darius' testimony, how Marone's style has changed. What do we miss here in Buffalo on Doug Marone? And I'm not even talking about the circumstances surrounding his departure, but during his tenure, what did we not get about Doug Marone that now
they were,
you know,
9-7. They were 9-7 in the second year,
yeah,
if I remember right.
Yeah,
right?
You're
like
right. Yep.
I mean, look, here's what I would say. I honestly think that the way the contract was set up is obviously that's a credit to the work that Doug's agent did in the negotiation and putting it out there.
Sure.
For a change in ownership. And I have to think, and Doug hasn't told me this directly, so I will make that clear, but I have to think Doug thought he had the Jets bag job in the bag, and that was going home for him, and that was going to work for a general manager and Mike McCagden, who he'd had a previous relationship with. And so I think it was a calculated gamble on his part to go and take the Jets job. I don't think the Bills wanted to get rid of him, and I think the reason he left Buffalo was because what he believed was a unique opportunity to coach for a team that was close to where he grew up. And it blew up in his face.
You know,
it blew up in his face in a very – it blew up in his face in a spectacular way. And I think he handled the – because he handled the departure from Buffalo really poorly, right? And we all know about, like, the text messages to the players, like, and he never really stood up in front of them and explained it to them. I think because he handled it poorly, he opened the door – for everything that went wrong in Buffalo to come out publicly. And that's on him. But I don't think he did a bad job in Buffalo. I think those teams were pretty good. And who knows? I mean, if it's Doug Marone instead of Rex Ryan coaching that team in 2015 and 2016, maybe we're talking about something else now.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, I wanted to...
You don't know. I mean, like, and look, I think part of it, too, is just... And you guys know this, like... If in the immediate aftermath of getting spurned that way, the way the Bills players got spurned, of course you're gonna be a little bitter about it, you know. And Doug deserved that. Like, Doug deserved the blowback that he got. Look, the guy's your boss. You're not always gonna like your boss, and you know you're probably gonna have some things you have an issue with your boss. And if your boss blows you off in the way that Doug Marone blew off the Buffalo Bills players, your reaction to it's probably going to be poor, right? And I think that's part of what happened.
Hey, Albert, I wanted to ask you this, and this is getting back to the Patriots and everything that's going on up there. We've heard all of the different reports, and you just brought up Josh McDaniels having to explain for his, you know, what happened out in Denver. You have Matt Patricia, who's the reports are he's going to be leaving. And we talk about Bill Belichick and his tenure coming to an end here soon. Do you feel like they have a successor in place? And why now would one of those coaches who could actually be the coach to step up and take that spot want to get out of New England?
Well, let's flip that around. Why would they want to stay? Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't Josh McDaniel sort of already do that in Denver, you know, succeeding Mike Shanahan?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing is, I don't think those guys had a great desire to follow Bill here. I mean, look, it sounds crazy to people in Buffalo, I'm sure, but, you know, 10 wins is a failure here. You know, the last time the team here won 10 games, it was it was seen as, you know, like a circus of a season. And winning a division here is no big deal. And I'm just telling you, like, living in this market, the way people here are critical of other coaches because they see what a clean game Bill coaches is outrageous. I mean, you listen to them talk about Mike Tomlin, you think they were talking about Rich Kotite,
right?
You know, and that's a guy who's won a Super Bowl and gone to two.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just think for anyone coming in here, it's going to be a really, really difficult environment. There's not going to be a lot of leeway to go through some growing pains as a head coach, which every new head coach has to go through. And even if you win, the standard here is so ridiculous because Bill has won at that level for so long.
Right.
I think it's just a tough, tough, tough spot for anyone to walk into. And so I'd actually flip what you asked around. And I just tell you, I don't think Josh or Matt had any great desire to be the successor to Bill. I think they'd rather go off and do their own thing. And think about it, right? If Matt Patricia wins the division next year in Detroit, he's a hero.
Right.
If Josh McDaniels gets Indianapolis back to the playoffs, he's a hero. Like, it's just, you're able to grow in that environment, I think, a little bit better. And, you know, the one name that I was kind of keeping an eye on that I think would have been one the Patriots ownership would have gone after is Bill O'Brien. But obviously, he just signed this new four-year deal, the four-year extension in Houston, and he's got Deshaun Watson to work with. So I'm not sure he'd have any great motivation to walk away from that one either.
Hey, Albert, before I let you go, I want to just talk about the post that you put up on MMQB, how conference championship teams were built. Seems to me if there's one common thread, well, maybe it's two things. Number one, it takes more than just drafting well to get a conference championship caliber team.
Yep.
And number two, you got to be able to deal with adversity and bounce back from setbacks. Would you agree? Is that
You know, I think it's interesting. Such a big part of the season was injuries, right? Like,
yeah.
It was on the cover of our magazine. You know, like, it feels like every year it gets worse and worse. And so I think it's become such a big part of what every NFL season is that war of attrition. And you can look at the last few champions, right? So New England wins last year without Gronkowski. Denver wins the year before that with Peyton Manning. Looking like a shell of himself, and C.J. Anderson hurt. Seattle won a few years ago. They barely had Percy Harvin the whole year, and he's been brought in to be a major part of what they do. It's such a huge part of any NFL season, and your ability to pluck the 30th, 35th, 40th player in your roster and put them into an important role, I think plays a huge part in how far these teams go. And look, every one of them's got it this year, right?
Yeah.
So the Vikings have the quarterback issues. The Vikings also lose Dalvin Cook, who was on his way to being an Offensive Rookie of the Year candidate. The Eagles, they lose Carson Wentz. They lose Darren Sproles. They lose Jordan Hicks. They lose Jason Peters, mm-hmm. and they're here. The Jaguars, they lose. They had Brandon Albert retire before the season, mm-hmm. and they lost their number one receiver, Allen Robinson. And the Patriots, of course, lose Julian Edelman and Dante Hightower. Such a huge part of being able to get here now is having resilience in your roster and having depth where if you lose even an important piece, you're able to fight through it. And so that was the thing that really stuck out to me. And it's highlighted, I think it's every year, but this year it's just highlighted because the quarterback position was so involved in it.
Well, it's great work, Albert.
It's just interesting to me because I feel like the Patriots go through something every year. And to be honest with you, Albert, I feel like sometimes they create this stuff. Like, just we thrive off this stuff. Every time somebody thinks, oh, man, it's coming to an end, they go on and win a Super Bowl.
You know what, though, Donald? Here's the thing. How did it all start? It all started with their quarterback getting hurt.
Yeah.
The whole thing started with Drew Bledsoe getting hurt.
Right,
you know, and that's how Tom Brady got in the game in the first place. So it's almost like when we're 15, 20 years ago, when we're looking back and assessing that, you know, the story of the New England Patriots of this 20-year period, you know, I mean, chapter one is Mo Lewis hitting Drew Bledsoe, and a young kid, 24 years old, wearing number 12, trotting off the sideline.
I just saw where they're bringing Drew back to be the honorary captain this Sunday, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing how that works, isn't it?
Full circle.
Drew's a great guy. I know you guys know that. He deserves it.
We love Drew. Albert, thanks for this. Great work. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us here today. Have fun at the game Sunday.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Albert Breer from MMQB, senior NFL reporter. It's definitely worth the read, his post, How Conference Championship Teams Were Built. You can find it at mmqb.si.com. And included in that post is the Marone-Belichick connection. You know, he had something else interesting in there, Donald, that I want to talk to you about regarding Jarvis Landry. Can we talk about that in a minute?
Oh, yeah, we can talk about that.
Okay.
We can definitely talk about that.
I'll let you read it first.
The one thing, though, is funny as Bill Belichick gives this, you know, this recommendation to hire Doug Marone if he comes back and beats him in the AFC Championship.
Great. That'd be outstanding. Who are you rooting for on Sunday? That's our Twitter poll. That's what you can ring us up and let us know what you think. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll free from outside Buffalo 1-888-550-2550. Albert Breer joined us via the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio in beautiful Orchard Park, New York. Got a few minutes left here. We got a full week's worth of shows coming up next week, Monday through Friday, and a lot to talk about next week, too, including the Super Bowl matchup. We're talking to you about who you're rooting for hard this week. Now, look, there's teams here in these the Final Four of the NFL that might not be the favorites of Bills fans, duh. But you got to have someone, right? You got to have a dog in the fight. Our Twitter poll, who are you rooting for? Who are the teams you're rooting for the hardest this Sunday in the championship matchup? And right now, it's pretty obvious most Bills fans are rooting hard for the Minnesota Vikings. 54% say that's the team they really want to win this week. 30% say they are rooting for the Jacksonville Jaguars. 10% say the Philadelphia Eagles. 6% say they're going with the Patriots. Mm. Like to meet those folks. Yeah. I'm going with the Eagles. I don't know why the Eagles don't get more support. What is that, Donald? Is
I'm
that
not sure.
That Vikings are America's sweethearts after that finish?
I don't know. I have no clue why people don't really want the Eagles to win or not really rooting for the Eagles. I think if Carson Wentz was playing, you'd have a lot of people rooting for the Eagles because they believe – I think people look at the Eagles team and they think it's a totally different team with Nick Foles. And it might be. It probably is a totally different team without Carson Wentz. People thought earlier in the year, this is the team that's going to go to the Super Bowl and this is the team that can actually challenge the Patriots. Now that you don't have him, people are like, I don't really care about the Eagles.
Who are you rooting for? Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Kevin calling from Hamburg. Hello, Kevin. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Okay.
Good. I'm rooting for anyone but the Patriots, and that's the bottom line. Anyone but them.
I hear you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I hear
you.
I
want to say something. Do you remember Mark Rippon in '91?
What's the name again?
Do you remember Kevin from Hamburg?
No. Who'd you just say?
Who are you asking me to remember?
Mark Rippon.
Sure, yeah, Mark Rippon, yeah. Washington.
He had a year sort of like Case Keenum. Came out of nowhere, dominated teams, spanked teams left and right, and people are like, who is this dude? You know, we're not even getting beat by a legend like Montana. We're getting beat by Mark Rippon. And he had an awesome ending. Of course, unfortunately, he beat our beloved Bills.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had a little bit more in his resume than Case Keenum and is a little bit more established. But, yeah, there's a bit of a parallel there.
Just think about this. For people who forget, Case Keenum was the quarterback of the Rams when the Bills played the Rams last year and beat up on them pretty bad. And I remember going into that game and we're like, it's Case Keenum.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we talking about here? And now the next year he's – in Minnesota, and now he's doing his thing, and people are like, man, this dude should be talked about in the MVP conversation. He's not just a game manager. He's actually a big part of their offense, all of that stuff, and you're still like, it's Case Keenum.
Right. Don't get ahead of yourself. Phil in Hamburg. Hello, Phil. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John. Hi, Donald.
Hello.
What's up?
I think your Twitter poll needed one more category, and that was anybody but Jackson. And that's me. Anybody but Jacksonville. If that means I got to root for the Patriots, I'm going to root for the Patriots.
And why are you
that
so
is strong
anti-Jaguars?
Hate from
so I think your guy from your last guest said the whole thing. Malone just ditched the Bills because he had a better gig, and all Belichick ever did was try to beat the Bills. But Malone, I think it was a slap in the face. And I don't like – he was a nitwit his whole last year and this whole St. Doug thing. And that's me. That's me, guys.
Okay. I understand that, Phil. And I'll tell you again, I'm repeating what I said in the first hour of the show. It's not Marone's departure and the nature of his departure that bothered me about about Marone. It's his tenure here. I don't like the way he handled the players. I don't like the way he handled the building. I thought his temperament was not good. When it came to being a leader of men. And I thought that during his entire two-year tenure. His departure made it worse, but I don't feel jilted or, feel like we were left standing at the altar. In fact, I was kind of glad that he left when he did, to be honest with you.
I just think, like I said, I wasn't here. I understand people are truly, truly upset that he left. If you left to chase your money, then go get it. You know, if they put that clause in there, then credit to your agent for getting that done, and you went and you got your money, and now you got yourself a second job. you have more of an inside story to a Doug Marrone, and I wasn't here for that. It's just hard for me to continue to root for the Patriots, you know. So I get tired of teams that win all the time, teams that win all the time. So that's why it's hard to root for the Patriots, teams like the Spurs, those types of teams. I mean, the Lakers. I'm a Yankees fan, so I understand why people hate the Yankees for a long time, because you were winning so much. The Patriots are that team right now that have been winning and dominating this division and the NFL for a long time. So it's hard for me to say, man, I'll go ahead and root for the Patriots because I just don't like Marrone. That's hard to do.
Hey, we were talking with Albert Breer a minute ago from MMQB, and I mentioned this about Jarvis Landry. It's a really good post that he has, how conference championship teams were built. He includes the part about Marrone and the Belichick campaigning for Marrone to get the Jacksonville job. And he also has this. The Dolphins have a big decision to make on Jarvis Landry, the wide receiver. He's a free agent. They already paid Kenny Stills. 2015 first-rounder Devontae Parker didn't have the breakout season many expected. Parker has next year and then an option year on his rookie deal. There's a likelihood it'll be tough to pay all three. Add to that, Albert Breer writes, and this is a quote, add to that the fact that Landry can be a pain in the butt. Yeah. And this is complicated.
I saw a story earlier, like this might have been last week, about Jarvis. To be honest, it might have been this story, about Jarvis Landry and not being able to keep him there because you have a few receivers there. They just paid Kenny Stills. I think they like Kenny Stills, especially as a deep threat. They need Parker to really come on here soon. But Jarvis Landry is a guy who does talk a lot. You know, he is a guy who does seem to be a pain in the butt. So I don't know if that coach down there, even though the rest of they have a bunch of personalities on that team like that, I don't know if he wants to deal with that moving forward. And quite honestly, you can't pay all of those guys.
Jarvis Landry's season ended with him being ejected from the game, walking up the tunnel, almost before he was ejected, right, in the Bills game.
Yeah.
Walking up the tunnel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the guy, I have no time at all for Jarvis Landry. I hope that he gets doesn't get the big payday from Miami. Somebody will probably pay him, but
Will pay him. I mean, he catches a lot of passes, but he's limited. He's a good slot receiver. For me, he's Victor Cruz. When Victor Cruz was in his prime before he got hurt,
yeah.
I mean, Jarvis Landry is a slot type of guy. He's not a deep threat or any of that stuff. He can catch the ball. He can run with it. So how much are you paying that type of guy? He's limited.
Yeah. Call here from Tom in West Seneca with some thoughts on this weekend's matchups. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
John, Don, thank you so much for having me. A few comments. I'm picking the Jaguars because the way they handled Pittsburgh, I thought Pittsburgh was going to clearly win. And also I'm taking Minnesota. In addition to this here, Coach Belichick, we know he's a great coach, but he's got something to carry. His legacy has some baggage. If we can all remember Spygate, that's not good. And as for Tom Brady, we know he's a quarterback phenom. Phenomenal statistics, unbelievable talent. But he also was involved in a scandal, Deflategate, and he doesn't need to do that stuff. But he tried to cover it up. He cheated. He lied. And then he tried to cover up the investigation. And that's something he's going to have to take along with his statistic, phenomenal statistic legacy. And I hope the Jaguars beat him. And I got to say this. I always thought the Patriots would do anything to win, including cheating. Thank you very much, guys, and have a great weekend.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, Tom, because they've had a few of those different scandals throughout, you know, their time in New England, throughout their time dominating everything. But at the end of the day, I feel like people have forgotten about that. Maybe because they win so much, but people have forgotten about those different things that they have gone through that they've been caught doing. I mean, Brady, he was suspended for, I guess, lying about it. I don't know. To be honest with you, that whole thing went on crazy for a long time. But I think ultimately people will forget about that. Once they retire, I mean, you might have some people bring it up, but that's not what they will talk about. If they go on and win this weekend, everybody's going to talk about how great of a franchise they have been over the last decade and a half. They're not going to bring up any of that stuff, any of those scandals from the past.
You sure?
I just don't. Not the national media. NBC doesn't do it. They praise the Patriots.
CBS does. CBS goes overboard, right? I know people who actually keep count of over and under. They bet on how many times Bob Kraft will be shown on the broadcast.
It's crazy.
Yeah, over and under four or five, you know. And he will be.
Yes.
Get ready.
I mean, just what's the over under on how many times the Tom Brady's hand will be shown this week in the broadcast?
20.
They're going to – every time he gets to the sideline, they're going to be camera right on his hand.
Here's Michael in Buffalo. Go ahead, Michael. Welcome. You're on the show with us.
Yeah, Murphy and Donald Jones. How y'all doing today?
Good, Michael.
Okay. Y'all doing a great show. I like y'all's show. I watch it every day.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you.
And I want to talk about the NFL this week.
Okay.
Okay.
I got Philadelphia going to the Super Bowl, and I got Jacksonville going to the Super Bowl, and Philadelphia will win it.
Philadelphia and Jacksonville, and that's who you're rooting for? That's who you want to win?
Yes.
Tell me why. Why Philly? Why Jacksonville?
Because both teams are real good. They got they know how to play football.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
I don't want New England in it.
Nobody wants New England in, right? 6%, 5% of our respondents to the Twitter poll want
I mean, nobody who's a fan, nobody who watches football really wants them in it. We're worse here, but everybody else is like, man, I don't want them in it either.
Done. We're done with it. We're going to break. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Greg Cosell on the show, executive producer, analyst for Edge NFL matchup on ESPN, and we asked him for his thoughts on the type of scheme that the new Bills offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, might run here in Buffalo.
He's been with Belichick for quite a while, a number of years. And so I think what you normally see with that is you see a lot of different personnel groups. You see a lot of different formations, particularly when you're in base personnel, meaning let's say you have a fullback on the field or two tight ends. You'll see a lot of different formation looks. You'll see a lot of shifts, a lot of motions. I think that's pretty much what he's probably learned from Bill Belichick. And it's been real successful in New England as a way to get people open in the pass game, to define the reads and the throws for the quarterback. I think he did a bunch of that at Alabama.
Greg Cosell on Bill's new coordinator, Brian Daboll, also on the show earlier this hour. Albert Breer joined us from mmqb.si.com. Wrote a post about this weekend's championship games. He also talked about the Patriots. He's there in New England as the Patriots get set to battle Jacksonville. And the latest drama deals, of course, with Tom Brady's injured hand. Not much new on that today. But Albert Breer talked about the entire Brady situation and all the drama that surrounds Tom Brady lately. And Albert Breer talked about how the Patriots have handled all that drama.
If you treat Tom Brady like he's the 30th guy in the roster, well, nobody has any room to complain about anything because you're treating Tom Brady that way. And he's allowed that. And he's always been kind of wanted to be one of the guys. And, you know, over the last year, we've seen him kind of venture outside of that a little bit with the TB12 method, with recruiting some other, with, you know, the guys that are running it up there for him, recruiting other players to it. And so, you know, I think that there are some things that have happened over the course of the last year that have been outside of who Tom has normally been.
Albert Breer on the Patriots and Tom Brady, the drama that always pays dividends. Our Twitter poll today, pretty simple. Who are you rooting for on Sunday? Which of the four teams, just one of the four, do you really want to see win? Who are you rooting for the hardest this weekend? Pretty overwhelmingly, more than half of our Twitter respondents, we had 2,000 Twitter respondents, more than half of you say the Minnesota Vikings are your pick this weekend. You want to see them win. 30% say the Jacksonville Jaguars. 10% say the Philadelphia Eagles. Only 6% say the New England Patriots, which makes a lot of sense, although we got a couple of tweets on this, Donald. We got a guy who tweeted in Michael Bordenaro says, the Patriots came into our league in 1960. They are our AFL brothers. He says, I'll always root for the AFL originals.
Wow.
Not me. And I like the AFL as much as anybody, but no, not that team. Not that team.
Yeah, I'm not rooting for them. They win. I'm just done with them.
Yeah, they've won enough. And UConn tweets, and this is interesting, he's rooting for the Eagles, the only team who didn't beat the Bills, the only team in the playoffs remaining who did not beat the Bills in the play in the in a Super Bowl. Only team in the division in the in the NFC East. He means, he's right. You know, Washington beat him, Dallas beat him, Giants beat him. I guess that's a reason to do that. Let's take one more call here, if I can squeeze one in. Debbie in Rochester, go ahead, Debbie. You're on the air.
Hey, fellas, love your show. And Donald, boy, I cannot agree with you more. No self-respecting Bills fan can root for the Patriots, much less win another Super Bowl. My hatred of them knows no boundaries. I absolutely am sick of them, like you say. And I don't care if Jacksonville wins and all that stuff with Marone. But I'm telling you, anybody except the Patriots, and again, you utter my sentiments completely, Donald.
Congratulations on that, Donald.
Thank you.
You're picking Jacksonville to win that game.
I'm going Jacksonville, and I'm going Minnesota.
I will go New England, begrudgingly, and I'll go Philadelphia. Let's see. We'll be back here Monday to hash it out and see how we make out. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenek, Thomas Hollander. Our producer is Jay Harris. Watch the games, react to the games, and come back here on Monday and talk with us about the games, the championship games coming up on Sunday. We'll see you then Monday with another edition of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.